I would like to welcome everyone to the meeting. Hopefully everyone can hear me clearly. Everyone should ensure that the mobile telephones are turned off or switched to silent, and use of mobile devices for recording is not permitted. Members of the public should not speak during the meeting and may be temporarily excluded for discussions of in-committee items. I remind members of their obligations under the Councillor's Code of Conduct to declare any financial or significant non-financial interests which they have in any item of business before the committee today. If you have such an interest, please either declare it now or immediately before the item itself, stating the item of business it relates to. Having declared an interest, members should leave the chamber for the duration of discussion of the item and should not take part in the vote. You will then be invited back to join the meeting once the discussion on that item has ended. Proceedings of the meeting will be audio and video recorded, except where Council is considering any exempt matters. Members should remember that the microphone works in a queuing system. If your microphone is lit red, you have precedence. Flashing green is next in the queue and then solid green. Please do not press your microphone button again or it's lit up red or you will lose your place in the queue. There may be some members in attendance virtually, and it has been agreed that all members in the chamber are brought in to speak on any issue before remote delegates. Therefore, if you're attending remotely, please use the chat facility to indicate you wish to speak and the members, once all the members in the chambers have spoken. Members are reminded that they are personally responsible for any comments they make at the meeting. Okay. Have we any apologies, sir?
An apology from Councillor McAteer.
Councillor McAteer. Okay. Moving on to Chairperson's remarks.
Sorry, apology, Councillor Lee Sargeant.
Councillor Lee Sargeant. Thank you, Chair. Okay, so just moving on to Chairperson's remarks, and I'll keep it brief because of the packed agenda this evening. I'd like to start off by thanking Councillor Kearns for stepping into the breach last month in my absence, so thank you for that, Jordy. I'd also like to congratulate the St. Patrick's Centre for 25 years of operation and providing tourism destination hope within Downpatrick. Myself and Councillor Hanlon attended a celebratory event which was well attended, and it was great to see the significance that St. Patrick's Centre has played in developing tourism across not just Downpatrick but across wider Newry, Mourne and Down District Council. And that is obviously leading into St. Patrick's Day as well, where at the honour of as a Downpatrick man leading the parade this year, and I just want to thank all the community groups, school groups, everyone who was involved in putting together the parade, especially the grassroots community sector within Newry, Mourne and Down, who contribute so much to making it the success that it is. So I'd like to thank everybody who was involved in that element of it, and obviously to the wider events team as well for putting on events in Newry and Downpatrick. I'd also like to comment that Martina Flynn and the team and within AHC, Andy, and all the events you're putting on for the Ending Violence Against Women and Girls, really strong emotive events, and a credit to the team. And I think I've really put across a strong message to the wider district that our council takes this seriously, and that we have to move forward on addressing the wider issue of ending violence against women and girls. And I think that it's something that is very prevalent in our society, and it's something we need to strive to strive to end. So thank you for your team on that one, Andy, as well. I'd also like to thank all the volunteers at Castlemell Forest Park. This is officially open. We also had a Volunteers Day. Yes, I'd like to represent the Volunteers Day, where we learned a few things and learned what some of us can and cannot do when it comes to horticulture. So I'd like to thank the team at Castlemell there for hosting us on that event day as well. On a more somber note, I would like to extend our condolences to the families of Seamus Lonergan, a Newry Mourne Downs Council employee who died suddenly. So we would like to extend our condolences to Seamus's family. And at the request of Councillor Feehan as well, I also would like to extend our sympathies to a former employee of Newry Mourne Council, Hilary Halliday, as well. So thank you for that, Councillor Feehan. Just one more item we have on our agenda. I do believe that's Councillor Taylor. David Taylor's birthday today. I will not ask for any age, David, but I will say happy birthday to you. So you were expecting. would it be a danger of setting up a fire alarm if we put a cake in here? Okay, so thank you. Moving on to item two in the agenda, which is declarations of interest. No? Okay. Item number three in the agenda, which is the action sheet, arises from the council meeting held on the 2nd of March 2026. Let's go through the action sheet. Page 1, page 2, page 3, page 4. Could I have a proposer and a seconder, please? This is Councillor Kate Murphy, seconder. Mr. Flynn, thank you, Derry. Any matters arising? Nope. Excellent. And item number 4 of the agenda, minutes of the council meeting held on the 2nd of March 2026. Go through for accuracy, page 1. 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Do we have a proposer and a seconder, please?
No proposed, Chair.
Councillor Andrews, seconder. Councillor Hanlon, any matters arising? No? Okay, thank you. We'll go through the minutes of Economy, Regeneration and Tourism Committee held on the 9th of March 2026. So, page 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. Can I have a proposer and a seconder, please? Opposed, Councillor Young, seconded, Councillor Clark. Any matters arising? No? Okay, thank you. Item number 6 on the agenda was the minutes of Strategy, Policy and Resources Committee held on the 12th of March 2026. Pages 1, 2, 1, 2. 10 pages, yeah. 4, 5, 6, and 7. Have a proposer and a seconder, please. Mr. Mathers, seconder. Mr. Hanlon, any matters arising? None, thank you. Item number 7 on the agenda, minutes of Active Healthy Communities, held on the 16th of March 2026, pages 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9. Okay. I'd propose in a second, please. Mr. Jackson and Councillor Murphy, any matters arising? No, thank you. Okay, moving on to item number 8, Minutes of the Sustainability and Environment Committee. Pages 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 9. For proposing a seconder, please. Mr. McGuinness, seconder. Mr. Murphy. Any matters arising? Councillor Byrne?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. It's on page 6. The item is environment charges for the financial year 2026-27. Chair, a question, just for clarity, or proposal on this. Obviously, there was a vote that was taken, and this is around the collection of commercial waste and commercial waste at HRCs, increase of 5% on charges for the year ahead. Chair, we just set the rates process. We discussed through a strategic finance working group all directorates and costs to run those directorates for the year ahead. This didn't come up. I know it's something that's done every year from reading the report, but there was no change last year, so obviously that had to be factored in to the rates process. It worries me, and I've said this before in previous rates processes, where we strike a rate, we collect about 2.8% of the rate payer, and businesses are struggling already, and then mere weeks afterwards, we increase costs on the rate payer for their waste. That simply can't happen. We either factor it in to the process and we're setting the rate, or we don't. We leave it to next year. So we can't go out to business and say we put 2.8% on your rates, and 6 weeks later we've increased this scale of charges for waste by 5% for businesses. So I propose that we reverse that decision made at the committee and we don't apply the 5% uplift.
Second to that proposal.
Something up here, so I'll sign it for Pete Boy.
Right, I'm just going to bring Sinead in on this.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Just to clarify in terms of the charges, so there's an increase in bulky household waste charge, which is the HRC commercial charges and the trade waste commercial charges are based on a cost recovery basis for the services provided. So it's based on the we pay for the disposal of those waste charges based on the polluter's pay principle, the person who is generating the waste pay for the disposal of that waste.
Everybody in agreement for the proposal that is ahead of us? Professor Hardick?
Yeah, I just wanted to ask, this came up in Sustainability and Environment Committee, and am I right in recalling that we were told that if the increase in costs wasn't agreed to, and there would be a drop in service, the service itself. But will it have an effect on the service?
Yes, through the chair. It wouldn't have an impact on the service provision, but it would have an impact on the cost. So, as I said, this is cost recovery. So, for commercial charges for residential customers, the cost of the disposal and the operation of the refuge is by the ratepayer, while for commercial charges, payment. So it'll not impact the service, but it'll be a cost. Unless the increase in provided for. And I suppose a further point of clarification is waste charges at the head. Like currently, the waste is not accepted into the HRC site's payment plan.
Yeah, so if it's a cost recovery issue, mm-hmm. if we defer the increase, it will still lead to an increased cost to ratepayers.
Yes.
Mr. Hallam?
I wanted to come in on Councillor Byrne's point about why was this never brought through the Strategic Finance Working Group? You know, when we work really, really hard to set a rate and looking at multi-year rates, and yet, like, not 2 months later, we're presented with something that's actually going to impact ratepayers. You know, so I think that was a valid point from Pete. So just wondering, why is it coming after we've actually agreed to set the rates?
Yes, bring in the sheet.
Shouldn't it's cost recovery, so it wouldn't actually have an impact on the rate. Payment is in relation to when we traditionally get the cost basis through sure is. So that is something that we can take that for next year.
Okay, thank you, Sinead. Mr. Riley, or Councillor Riley?
Yeah, thanks very much, Chairman. Yeah, this came up at S&E, and myself and Johnny Jackson, my colleague, supported Councillor Andrews' proposal on that night. Disappointed that it failed there, but it's definitely worth looking at again. In terms of commercial waste, we don't want to price ourselves out of the market, as we pointed out before. Can I just ask you, Sinead, in terms of if somebody's sick, and that illness generates additional waste, and the doctor gives a note to the council that they can get a bigger bin, does that person have to pay the full price for the bigger bin? Because that was mentioned in the... I mentioned that at that event, and Sinead was going to come back to me, but she hasn't done
it. Through the chair, yes, that question is reflected in the minutes of the meeting. So if there's an increase in size for collection, yes, there is a charge, and that's under the current refuse collection.
Sorry, Sinead.
Yes, that was clarified at the meeting, and it's reflected in the minutes. So if a householder, and that's residential waste rather than commercial waste, so if additional bin size or additional bin capacity is required, and a larger receptacle or an additional receptacle is required, the individual pays for the cost of the receptacle.
Yeah, because if you have a single person, elderly person on the care assistance going in and have asked for that bin, I think, is it £150? I haven't got it in front of me here at the minute, but I'm just from memory in the night. It just seemed a lot of money for a sick elderly person to have to come up with for that bin.
Through the chair again, just to be completely clear here, this is residential rather than commercial, so there's.
Yeah.
On paper, the bin charges are laid out. So standard bin size is a 200-litre bin.
Yes.
So the option would be to buy a second 240-litre bin. That's priced at £37.
Oh, so you can have the two bins. You don't have to buy a big.
Or the bigger bin is £69. So
right.
Yes.
Well, I'll stay it on. Thank you.
We don't charge to collect that.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's just there was a bit of confusion amongst.
Councillor Byrne, you're looking in again?
Yeah, just clarifying, just come back and sorry, Chair, sort of. Just to clarify and come back on Councillor Hannan's point. And is hitting exactly the point I want to make. This is not about having a go with officers or councillors or anything. This is about how we're perceived by the public and a culture that I had said at the last rates process and the one before that, we will point out where we're taking decisions where we're increasing costs on people between rate processes. We should do it and be honest with people. Your rates are going up 2.8% for the services, and then they come in weeks after, and a 5% increase on waste services of commercial businesses or HRCs is not acceptable politically. Is not acceptable, and I think we need to come through a strategic finance working group to do that. Whether we're increasing plot sizes or plot costs and cemeteries or whatever, all that is done at the one time. Because people then don't see us as being honest brokers in terms of increasing the rate and then coming in and popping up afterwards. And they're the things that grab headlines. And there could be small amounts, Sinead, and I have no doubt next year that that's going to need it to be increased in terms of inflation, but at least we're upfront with people. And those small amounts don't tumble weed into big headlines and people say they're increasing. So we said we would call it the rates process, and that's why I don't think we should be passing it tonight. I think the council should absorb the cost and then look at it again next year. That doesn't go on to the ratepayer or the commercial businesses who already have been hit enough. So, you know, it's a small cost, but it's a really, really important point. So my proposal stands that we don't put this through tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Byrne. Councillor Hanlon?
Yeah, and appreciate you letting me in again. I just wanted to ask, in terms of that proposal to be absorbed, where would it be absorbed into if we have already set the rate and I would presume agreed the budgets across the directorates? So it's left us now in a position in the Chamber that we're asking for costs to be absorbed that we don't actually really understand where they're going to be absorbed into. So I think it just goes back to the original point of that it should have been through SFWG.
I'm going to bring Sinead in to see you.
Thank you, Chair. As it's cost recovery, if we don't recover that cost, it will have to be absorbed into the revenue budget.
Councillor Byrne?
Last line, just on that. It's either absorbed by council in whatever budget line in revenue, or it's absorbed by the ratepayer in the business. And that's an uncomfortable position for councillors. We shouldn't, you know, biggest point. Absorbing it, we're either putting it in businesses' feet, or we have to absorb it ourselves. I think we have to absorb it ourselves because of the way we have through the process.
Okay, so we have a proposal on the floor. Are we in agreement? Yep. Okay, thank you. Okay, moving on to item number 9, which is the planning committee, the report. Item number 10 is the correspondence report. And any kind of proposal or seconder for the correspondence? Councillor Young? Are you proposing?
Yeah.
Seconder? Councillor Rice. Any matters arising? Councillor Young.
Thanks, Chair. Correspondence item 10.4. I'd like to welcome the response from the Health Minister to Councillor Lewis's motion in relation to sudden unexplained death of a child. 3 weeks ago this evening, our community in the Meadow and Armagh Road was devastated by the loss of Shay Hockey. There was a palpable cloud of sadness and disbelief, not just across our community, but across Newry and far beyond. Shay embraced every minute of his 12 years of life. I don't think I ever saw him without a smile on his face. He loved his football and Gaelic. He loved being with his friends. He loved the crack. We hold his mummy, daddy, sisters and his family and his many friends in our thoughts and prayers. There is a limited awareness and research to understand SUDC, and currently no one can predict or prevent these deaths. They continue to devastate families year on year. We must encourage collaboration across agencies and fund crucial medical research to better understand these tragedies. There must be support for families affected by SUDC and an improvement in awareness and understanding of sudden unexplained death in childhood.
Thank you, Councillor Young. Councillor Rice.
Jeremy, I've got Chair. Just in relation to 10.1 and 10.2, I'll take 10.1 first. In response to the Health Minister, well, I thank the Minister for his response. I must say it does very little in way of reassurance. The Minister does point out the budgetary constraints and ongoing engagement with trust, yet he simply reinforces the core issue that was raised within our motion. The Department continues to fund training places without securing employment pathways to match. While they have suspended intake until September 2027, they are still planning to fund future placements. A suspension of intake only underlines the failure for workforce planning. It isn't a solution, but a symptom of the system that is not aligning towards the training and need. Our health service is under immense pressure, and yet we are allowing trained, capable professionals to leave the system unused. Many of these trained professionals are working as agency workers in zero-hour contracts or leaving these shores to gain employment elsewhere. While forums and reviews, we welcome them, they do not replace the need for urgent funded posts on the ground. Patients will not benefit from strategies or discussions, and they will only benefit from staff in hospitals and GP surgeries. The Minister acknowledges the situation is unsatisfactory, but I would go further and say that it's unsustainable. The ethos of the motion was simply asking for alignment between investment and delivery. Until that happens, the concerns outlined within my motion remain entirely valid. Then turning to item 10.2, the response from the Agriculture Minister. I do welcome the response from Minister Muir. The Minister and the Secretary of State, Hilary Benn, heard firsthand at a recent meeting with fishermen and fishing producers in Kilkeel last week. The issues regarding the changes to the Isle of Man fisheries legislation was put to them both, and there was an understanding of the impact this has on crews and processors in Kilkeel, Arglass and Port of Ogate. However, as this council knows, this is one of the many issues that threatens to decimate the fishing industry here in the north. The British government's Coastal Growth Fund, which will give our local fleet just 2.8% of the total fund, the rising cost of fuel that is hampering all sectors in agri and food production, and the worsening seasonal visa bureaucracy. These are all the issues that need urgently addressed. And without addressing these issues, it is clear that fishing communities across South Down and indeed the North will cease to exist as we know them. So I do look forward to seeing how future engagement from the Minister of Agriculture and the Secretary of State pan out, as fishing communities need real support now. Jeremy, I've got Chair.
Councillor Feehan.
Yes, thanks very much, Chair. I was hoping to speak on item 10.3. I would obviously thank the Health Minister for responding to the correspondence. I have to say, I think it's regretful that the Health Minister isn't able to find time in his diary to meet with us to discuss this issue. Obviously, the genesis of this issue was the death of a woman in this district, Catherine Sherry. I know that Councillor Herty has spoken very passionately on this issue as well, and seems like a very strange and eccentric set of circumstances whenever people from here are required to get on a plane and go to London or Manchester or Glasgow for treatment that they should be able to access, that they're entitled to expect within one of the trusts in the north. In terms of the correspondence itself, I would draw members' attention in particular to one paragraph saying that any NHS centre delivering QRT requires additional accreditation and the lead-in time to ensure the Belfast Trust meets these requirements with HTA and MHRA, and to ensure that staff are trained properly. He says that the Department of Health are working to scope what could potentially be delivered in a phased approach ahead of a handover of a new haematology ward. Now, I know that I've met with Blood Cancer UK, Leukaemia Lymphoma NI, consultant haematologists at the City Hospital, and families of people that have first-hand experience of this issue. And all of the feedback coming from all of the experts is that there are senior clinicians in the north of Ireland that are qualified and able to provide this care within the hospital's estate. I can't understand why it is the position of the Department of Health that we should be expected to wait until quarter two 2030 at the earliest before people can access this treatment here. So whilst I acknowledge that the Minister has said that he has very constraints and he can't meet with a delegation of councillors, I would ask or propose that we respond to the Minister and ask, in lieu of meeting with him, which I still believe we should be doing, can he arrange for us to meet with senior officials or relevant officials within his department so that we can drill down into the detail that's in this letter and understand why people and families here are being told that you're just going to have to wait to get the health care that you require. Thank you, Chair.
Seconder for that proposal, Councillor Fien. Councillor Flynn, are we in agreement? Yep, okay. Councillor Hannah?
Chair, it's 10.2, the same as Councillor Rice. To be quite honest with you, at this moment in time, speaking to so many fishermen around Kilkeel Harbour, the fishermen have pretty much lost all confidence in the Agriculture Minister at the moment. Anyone I have spoken to is of the same opinion pretty much as myself. He was asleep at the wheel there whenever this legislation went through the Manx government. I don't understand what his officials were doing at the time. So there were legislation does not go through, so it does in a matter of a few days. I'm sure it takes a considerable amount of time in the Manx government, the same as everywhere else. What he has done is permitted the Eilean government to go ahead and do this. And I know Michael and his colleague met with Hilary Byrne and them, but at this moment in time, it appears and that the Minister Muir has little or no understanding of what's going on in the fishing industry whatsoever. At the moment, with the loss of the fishing off the Isle of Man other fisheries, it leaves a small slither of fishing down the middle of the Irish Sea where these crews can now actually fish. And Minister Muir is in the process at the moment of considering to close that down and shut that down too. So it's actually pretty much, if this all goes through, along with no legislation to sort out the foreign crews before the end of this year, there will be pretty much no fishing industry left in the Northern Ireland here, especially on the county down coast. So just at the moment, I'm so disappointed in Minister Muir. The fishermen have lost pretty much confidence in him, so they have. And no matter what he says, he has done very, very little since this, with the Manx fishery, has come up. He's done very little engagement. He's done nothing positive whatsoever, so he has to try to engage and persuade the Manx government to reverse what they've decided. So at this moment in time, that is the opinion that I'm getting from Kilkeel Harbour. So thank you, Chair, for allowing me to speak.
Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Okay, so we're moving on to item number 11. That was the motion, Independent Environmental Protection Agency. Councillor Truesdale, would you like to speak to your motion and tell us your second, please?
Shall I read the motion again? First of all, thank you, Chair, for letting this be heard at this month's council. You know, it was supposed to be last month, so thank you very much for that. The motion follows that this council strongly condemns the blocking of the establishment of an independent environmental protection agency, an IEPA, by the DUP in the Assembly and Executive. Further condemns the hypocrisy of those who express concern over the Loch Day crisis, the illegal dump at Moboy, and wider environmental degradation, but refuse to support plans to enhance environmental accountability and safeguard. Notes that a commitment to an IEPA was contained within the New Decade, New Approach deal, agrees to write to the Secretary of State for Northern Ireland to ask him to urgently convene a process of institutional reform in consultation with the Irish government and local parties to remove blockages and vetoes from Stormont system of government, and to ask the Secretary of State to take meaningful steps to ensure that commitments of New Decade, New Approach are implemented. So at the minute, Northern Ireland is ranked as one of the most nature-depleted countries in the world, with roughly 12% of its species threatened with extinction. Decades of intensive agriculture, pollution and climate change have caused severe biodiversity losses. This includes a 43% drop in farmland bird abundance and massive algae blooms affecting crucial ecosystems like Loch Ness, which has now turned into a worldwide example of how not to do things. The Rivers Trust report 2024 reported that none of Northern Ireland's rivers are in good overall health. Add that to Mavoy, and Northern Ireland ranks among the worst performing countries in the world, 12th worst out of 240 on the Biodiversity Intactness Index. The environmental dashboard is flashing red from decades of neglect, and if there was a colour above red, it would flash that too. This is utterly shameful. We rely heavily on our coastlines, our natural landscape, our history, our culture for tourism and our economy. What happens when that's all destroyed? Well, that's easy to answer, because visitors, the very wealthy and industry will just move elsewhere. How has this been allowed to happen? We support an IEPA because we recognise that thriving nature, clean water and access to beautiful landscapes are essential for our social and economic well-being. We also understand the need to have a clear of any influence and be completely independent. What we have isn't working. However, the DUP said no, voting against a proposal in the Assembly and blocking progress at the Executive, despite the clear will expressed at the Assembly in support and despite the way we regulate our environment dramatically changing since Brexit. We need a non-departmental public body like the rest of the UK. But it's bigger than this, because this was a commitment in the new decade, new approach, an agreement the DUP signed up to. So there should be no reason not to support this. We need to ensure independent and robust monitoring and appropriate mechanisms in place to hold government and polluters to account. A recent listed poll found 83% of people believe nature's in decline and support targets to restore it. 87% of people agreed the executive must do more, and 70% agreed on the need for an IEPA. The IEPA will require cross-departmental and executive support and cooperation, clear, strong, coordinated working relationships with other enforcement bodies, east, west, north, south, including councils. Northern Ireland's power-sharing structures are in desperate need of reform. The ability of any single party to veto decisions is making it untenable. It is not enough anymore to say to the people that we cannot do the difficult job of governance when we are denying those people clean air, clean water and good soil. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Truesdale. Is it for clarity, who's seconding your motion? Would you like to speak to the motion? Yep. Councillor Hardy. Councillor Truesdale, could you put your mic up?
Sir Margaret Kaherlach. I fully share Councillor Truesdale's frustration around the lack of an independent environmental protection agency. An IEPA is not only a requirement of NDNA, but it's also an essential step in crafting and enforcing meaningful environmental protection measures. The existing bodies we have either do not have the required powers or the interest in doing so. The OEP in particular, which was set up to replace overarching EU environmental bodies and standards, is just not fit for purpose here. Like most bodies set up by the British government, it's entirely England-centric, and until relatively recently didn't even have a single representative from the North on its board. To this day, it still doesn't even have an office anywhere in the North. An EPA based here would be able to deal with the unique environment and biodiversity of the island and work closely with counterparts in the rest of Ireland to ensure the best possible environmental practices, and particularly in border areas like this, to effectively tackle breaches of environmental regulations. In regards to wider reform, I have to say one of the most shameful tactics of the DUP in the Assembly over the years has been the misuse of mechanisms designed to protect minority communities, to shield themselves and their ministers from criticism, or to hold up legislation they disagree with. These mechanisms are precision tools to be used only in the protection of equality. They're not sledgehammers to be pulled out whenever the democratic process does not turn out in your favour. The Assembly absolutely does need wider reform, and Sinn Féin have been working extensively with the Assembly and Executive Review Committee to develop and facilitate that. I would add, however, that as a devolved institution, reform of the Assembly is a band-aid solution, and the kind of fundamental reform that people want to see here can only come about with the development of a sovereign all-Ireland government. So the most effective call for reform is a call for a unity referendum. In the meantime, however, we have a duty to make the current system work for the people here as best we can, deeply flawed and fundamentally flawed as it is. And with that duty in mind, I would commend and support the motion. Carmagat.
Councillor Finn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. I welcome the fact that this motion has been brought before the Council this evening, and I'd like to thank Councillor Truesdale. However, it is really frustrating that this hasn't been further progressed at Stormont. It's very clear that our environment is struggling, and you only need to look at Loch Neagh, one of our most precious natural resources, now badly polluted and subject to piecemeal interventions, for a problem that will take years, if not decades, to fully restore. This extends well beyond Loch Neagh. To date, Northern Ireland remains the only region across the UK and Ireland without an Environmental Independent Protection Agency, and is, as Councillor Truesdale stated, 12th worst out of 240 countries and regions for biodiversity loss, making it one of the most nature depleted. Many of our rivers and waterways are failing, biodiversity is declining at an alarming rate, our water air quality is contributing to illness and premature death, and our response to the climate emergency has lacked urgency and coordination. If we are really serious about turning this around, we need a truly independent environmental protection agency with the authority to enforce the law and hold the government to account. The Deer Minister has made his intentions clear, however, he has been unable to secure executive agreement for an independent protection agency, despite the fact there is clear public and Assembly support for stronger, independent environmental oversight. That's why the SDLP opposition has brought forward an amendment to the Financial Provisions Bill to try and ensure this issue is debated and voted on in the Assembly. The scale of the environmental challenges we face demand leadership, and no party should be or can be allowed to block necessary reform because of narrow political dogma. The SDLP will do all it can to deliver an independent EPA, and I'm confident that my MLA colleagues will use every mechanism they can to make that happen. The fact that this is being blocked in the Assembly and we are now discussing it at Council level again highlights failure to deliver for people here, which is so frustrating given that this is also, as the motion mentions, a new decade, new approach commitment. The SDLP will be supporting this motion this evening and hope that other parties will support the SDLP amendment to deliver an environmental protection agency if that's accepted by the Speaker in the Assembly. Our climate is far too important to play party politics with, and I look forward to seeing this vital piece of work progressed.
Thank you, Councillor Finn. Councillor Blasey.
The DUP will absolutely block the Alliance Party from shirking responsibility. The Agriculture Minister is responsible for the NIEA, whose remit is environmental protection. Minister Muir now wants to abdicate responsibility and pass the buck for environmental protection to an independent body which isn't held accountable to the electorate and diverts more funding away from existing environmental agencies. Our party's agriculture spokesperson, Michelle McElveen, MLA, has made clear that before the Minister rushes ahead with structural change, he must first demonstrate that his department can deliver and resource the functions it already has. The focus should be on performance and accountability, not on creating another layer of bureaucracy. The Minister should also seek to work with the DUP to find realistic solutions that support the needs of our rural economy and farming community. Any discussion on the operation of the Executive and the Assembly is a matter for the political parties of Northern Ireland.
Councillor Blasey, Councillor Taylor.
Yep, thank you, Chair. Just a couple of points, just brief remarks in respect of the motion. I suppose on the first point of the motion, certainly my party supports genuine independence for an environmental regulator, but independence must be built on a well-defined mandate, and we should have proper resourcing for that and financial transparency. Certainly, as a country, we can't afford another round of restructuring that multiple agencies blur lines and drain resources. And we also need a regulator that's trusted and effective and works with others rather than sitting above them. So that's one aspect of the motion that should be given consideration. In regards to the latter part of the motion regarding reform of the local political institutions, that's a much wider issue than the topic of an IEP. So And certainly from our point of view as a party, one of the core principles for us as an internal government arrangement on the Strand One issue for Northern Ireland, any reform or any agreed discussion regarding the full reform is for local parties only. And that makes very clear there shouldn't be any involvement of the Irish government in that. And we certainly wouldn't be supporting their participation. So I won't be supporting the motion that's being presented here by Councillor Tousdale tonight.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. So we do not have agreement in the chamber, so by show of hands, can we say who for the motion? For the vote. Okay, go for the vote.
Mr. Andrews?
For.
Councillor Bowsey?
Against.
Councillor Brennan? Online.
Apologies for.
Councillor Byrne?
For.
Councillor Campbell?
For.
Councillor Clark?
For.
Councillor Devlin? Councillor Enright?
For.
Councillor Fagan?
For.
Councillor Finn?
For.
Councillor Gilbreth?
For.
Councillor Gibbons is absent. Councillor Hanlon?
For.
Councillor Hannah? Councillor Hart? Councillor Hardy? Councillor Hoyle?
For.
Councillor Howie?
For.
Councillor Jackson?
Against.
Councillor Kearns? Councillor Orliking?
For.
Councillor Cahill King?
For.
Councillor Larkin?
For.
Councillor Lawler?
For.
Councillor Lee Searcher is absent. Councillor Lewis? Councillor McGuinness? Councillor Mathers? Councillor McAteer is absent. Councillor Declan Murphy? Councillor Kate Murphy? Councillor Selena Murphy? Councillor O'Hare? Councillor Quinn? Councillor Riley?
Against.
Councillor Rice? Councillor Rowan?
For.
Councillor Taylor?
Against.
Councillor Tinley? Councillor Tousdale?
For.
Councillor Young? That's 32 for and 6 against.
So the motion has passed. Okay. Would you like to sum up, Councillor Tousdale?
Thank you, Chair. I'd just like to remind the DUP that it's not the Agriculture Minister, it's the DERA Minister, which stands for Agriculture and Environment Minister. An independent EPA would consolidate, not duplicate. Regulatory and monitoring functions would transfer from the Department and the Northern Ireland Environment Agency to a new body. Sorry? It would not be an additional layer. The existing structures would be replaced with a more effective and accountable model. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Tousdale. Okay, moving on to item number 12 for the motion, Symphatic Centre Review on the Standard Order 16.1.6. This will be heard in the SPNR. Councillor Hannah, would you like to read your motion and inform us as to who is seconding?
Yeah, it's seconded by yourself, Chairperson. So, the Symphatic Centre Review, this Council recognises the significant contribution of St Patrick's Centre Downpatrick has made to tourism and heritage. As Ireland's only exhibition centre dedicated to the life and legacy of our patron saint, we must recognise the significant role it plays in promoting our patron saint. This Council will pledge cross-party support for the centre, and a review is initiated based on the Tim Husband report presented to Council in October 2019. We will write to DFC and DFE seeking support for the centre. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Hanlon. Moving on to item number 13 on the agenda, which is notice of motion basic income for artists. Councillor Finn, would you like to read your motion and inform us as to your second, please?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. This Council notes that the arts, culture and creative sectors are central to our social fabric, well-being, identity and local economy. Many artists, performers and creative workers in the district and across the north continue to experience insecure, low and irregular incomes worsened by the long-term impact of COVID-19 and the ongoing cost of living crisis. The Irish Government introduced a basic income for artists pilot in 2022, providing an unconditional weekly payment to artists and creative workers, which has been independently evaluated as improving financial stability, well-being and time spent on the creative practice. The Irish Government is now committed to making this scheme permanent, recognising the structural precarity faced by those working in the creative industries. This Council believes that artists and creative workers should not be forced out of their professions due to financial insecurity. Newry-Mourne and Down's creative sector is a vital public good, contributing to community cohesion, regeneration, tourism, mental health, youth engagement and cultural life. A basic income for artists scheme in the north would help protect creative livelihoods, retain local talent and strengthen the district's cultural ecosystem. This council resolves to call on the executive to introduce and fund a basic income scheme for artists, modelled on the Irish government's programme providing regular, unconditional income support to eligible artists and creative workers. Requests that the Communities Minister leads on the development of this scheme in partnership with the Department for Economy and the Department of Finance, engaging directly with the arts and creative sectors in its design. And will write to the First and Deputy First Minister urging that this proposal be treated as a priority within the Executive's programme for government and budget setting process. And it's going to be seconded by Councillor King. Council, thank you very much for the opportunity to bring this motion before you all this evening. And I would just like to take this opportunity to actually share my condolences to the family of Michael Patrick, his stage name is Michael Patrick, and his name is Michael Campbell, an incredibly talented actor who I've been fortunate enough to see on a number of occasions, and a really valued friend and colleague of Oisin Kearney, an incredible talent from Warren Point. So I just thought that it would be appropriate to share our condolences with his family. Council, all too many times I've had to make the statement in this chamber that our artists deserve better, but I'll continue to do so because, quite plainly, it's true. We live in a part of the world where we celebrate Oscar wins, world-class TV dramas and theatre productions that travel all over the world to showcase our history in a way that only theatre can. We all sit down to watch shows like Blue Lights, Derry Girls and Line of Duty. We see bands like Snow Patrol playing on international stages and watch actors like Seamus O'Hara bring Oscars home to primary schools within the constituency. These are incredible achievements. However, all too often, artists here will say that their celebrated success happens in spite of and not because of the support they receive. I've said it many, many times. However, it is absolutely shameful that our cultural capital spend is just £5.07 per head in Northern Ireland, in comparison with £22.50 just over the border. And cultural spend accounts for just 1% of the Department of Communities budget. Along with this, despite numerous executive ministers mentioning our arts and artists on global visits, they are not mentioned in our programme for government once. Without properly funding our artists and creative workers at grassroots, we risk losing the ecosystems that create productions and art that is so important and celebrated across the globe. And that is why a universal basic income is so vitally important. COVID, Brexit and the cost of living are acutely impacting on our artists, so much so that some of them are choosing to leave a profession that they absolutely love within their community, and others are leaving these shores because they think they'll find better opportunities elsewhere, and this just can't be allowed to continue. We have to see a multi-year budget from the executive parties, and I believe it's vitally important that we use our voice as a council to speak out and advocate on behalf of artists and creatives across our district who do so much to enrich our lives. The arts promote children's education, development, they increase confidence, they benefit mental health, they promote rehabilitation, and I could go on and on about the positive impacts that the arts have on our lives, but I'd just like to finish by saying I hope this motion receives support this evening so that we can all throw our weight behind a scheme that values our artists properly and the way they should be. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Finn. And Councillor King, would you like to speak to the motion? Councillor Campbell King?
Yeah, thank you, Chair, and thank you, Councillor Finn, for bringing this motion forward. Sinn Féin recognises the huge contribution our artists make to our communities and our economy. And with Belfast hosting the FLA this year and our own events taking place, like Wake the Giant, Eats and Beats, Footsteps in the Forest, we have a real opportunity to showcase that talent. But bringing it closer to home, in Newry alone, I see how vital the arts are. Our party works alongside groups like Sticky Fingers Arts, delivering incredible work across the community. And even in my own family, quite recently, I've seen the impact through involvement in Newry's recent arts festival. Confidence and opportunity it gives people is invaluable. We also support the idea of a basic income scheme for artists. There is merit in this. Indeed, we are, as a party, supported the concept and have been pressing the Dublin Government to ensure that the basic income scheme continued beyond this year as it was set to end. The Communities Minister can and should consider proposals to support the arts, including a future income support scheme. But let's be honest at the same time, the scheme in the south costs over €18 million. So the question is, how is it being funded here? Because the reality is, the executive here does not have the same fiscal powers as the government in the south. We are operating within a constrained budget, largely determined by an out-of-touch British government. And we are tasked with allocating what is provided, not generating the revenue at the same scale. But I just think we need to be conscious of our reality here in the north. Where exactly would this money be found based on the current budget settlement? But that said, Councillor Finn, we recognise the intent behind this motion and the need to support our arts, culture and creative sectors. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor King. Councillor Young.
Thanks, Chair. Thanks, Councillor Finn, for bringing this motion, which we're very happy to support. It's extremely important that the arts have support, and this looks like a really good initiative. I'm aware of its presence in the South, which I've been following, but I've also been contacted pardon me, by some artists who are concerned by any implementation here, the potential of it being diluted, as well as the length of time it could be paid for. I know that the initial intervention was not designed with a limited time period in mind and allowed really long-term support for practitioners, recognising the genuine obstacles they face. Now the scheme has been shortened and lasts for 3 years, and this means that anyone benefiting in the short term could possibly find themselves potentially worse off in the longer term. However, we feel it's better to receive the benefit for 3 years and for others to then have the opportunity to apply and to have a chance of receiving the support. So with this in mind, if this is agreed this evening, Councillor Finn, would you consider including something referring to a potential time frame within the letter, specifically because of what's happened with the scheme in the South? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Young. Is the Alliance Party position that you're in? Oh, sorry. Mr. Flynn, would you agree to an amendment?
Please, to the Communities Minister letter, or, yeah, no problem at all.
Councillor Flynn. Mr. Taylor, you were looking in there?
Yeah, Chair. I think this is well documented within the Chamber, you know, how passionate Councillor Flynn is regarding the arts sector. I know from quite a number of motions have actually brought since you've been on council, so no doubt, you know, that the intention of this motion is, you know, with a genuine concern for the sector. And I think we all recognise that the arts do bring, you know, multiple benefits, you know, both economically from a tourism point of view and even from a personal development point of view, to anyone that, you know, performs or takes part within that sector. The motion itself, I certainly wouldn't stand in the way of allowing it to go forward for consideration to the executive. But I'm not going to pretend I don't have concerns about it as well. I think there are a number of issues. I suppose there are other sectors where you could argue for a basic income as well. There is a situation, again, that's been already relayed about how do you actually finance this, given that the executive is already in a difficult position financially in terms of trying to cover what they already have in place. And I suppose the qualifying criteria for this is an important aspect of it as well. There's a reference here to conditional income support. I think you have to have some criteria apply to anything that you're giving to anybody. You know, you can't have an unconditional situation. So there are some issues of concern that I have, but I certainly won't object to the proposal going forward. I think if the executive could certainly look at it anyway and see if there is anything possible, that, you know, all well and good. But the support wouldn't be full wholehearted at this stage. I think there's a lot of work to do on something like this before I could do that, but certainly wouldn't stand in the way of it going forward. Okay, thank you.
Okay, Councillor Taylor, Councillor Hannah.
Just on this motion, Chair, that we have deep concerns, as highlighted by some of the other councillors, and at this moment in time, we'll not be supporting the motion, but we'll not be going against it either, so we'll not. So I would like a recorded vote on this too.
Okay, so we'll do a recorded vote.
Councillor Andrews?
For.
Councillor Bowsey?
Abstain.
Councillor Brennan.
Four.
Councillor Byrne.
Yeah, four.
Councillor Campbell.
Four.
Councillor Clark.
Four.
Councillor Devlin. Councillor Enright.
Four.
Councillor Feehan.
Four.
Councillor Finn.
Four.
Councillor Galbraith.
Four.
Councillor Gibbons is absent. Councillor Hanlon.
Four.
Councillor Hannah. Councillor Hart. Councillor Hardy. Councillor Howell.
Four.
Councillor Howie.
Four.
Councillor Jackson.
Abstain.
Councillor Kearns. Councillor Orlicking. Councillor Cahill-King.
Four.
Councillor Larkin.
Four.
Councillor Lawler.
Four.
Councillor Lee Sturgeon is absent. Councillor Lewis. Councillor McGuinness. Councillor Mathers. Councillor McAteer is absent. Councillor Declan Murphy. Councillor Kate Murphy. Councillor Selena Murphy. Councillor O'Hare. Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley. Councillor Rice. Councillor Wan.
Four.
Councillor Taylor. Councillor Tunnelly. Councillor Treesdale. Councillor Young.
Four.
I have 32 for, none against, and 6 abstentions.
Okay, so the motion is passed. Councillor Finn, would you like to sum up?
Yes, thank you. Just, I think it's under Standing Order 19.19 that I should have summed up before a vote. In terms of, and it's fine, but I just think if there had been other concerns, I maybe would have been able to address, but just to flag that in case that happens moving forward, just to say thank you very much. I understand, like what Councillor Taylor said, that obviously this scheme does need to be designed and implemented, and that's something that I hope the departments that I've mentioned in the motion will look at, and if Councillor King could maybe have a word with his colleague in the finance department, we might find funding for it. That would be great. And happy birthday to Councillor Taylor.
And Councillor Finn. Moving on to item number 14, notice of motion Strangford Portaferry Bridge. Councillor Bowsey, would like to read the motion and performance as to you a second.
Erie Mourne and Down District Council recognises the importance of improving connectivity in East Down and the huge benefits this can bring to the wider district in terms of boosting the local economy, enhancing tourism and tackling isolation. This council is also committed to supporting more reliable, affordable and sustainable forms of travel for residents and visitors within our district. Furthermore, this council is concerned with the increase in traffic along roads on both sides of Strangford Lock, which could be better served by a fixed crossing between Strangford Village and Portaferry. This may also alleviate increase in congestion in parts of Rowellan and Downpatrick DEAs, as well as in the Ards District, thus shortening journey times and improving road safety. NMD Council therefore agrees to write to the Infrastructure Minister to request that she secure funding for a feasibility study into a bridge across Strangford Lock from Strangford to Portaferry, and this will be supported by Councillor Lewis. And that's all for now.
Speaker motion, Councillor Bowsey, or is it?
Well, it's just one win.
Yeah, Councillor Andrews.
Okay. Thank you very much, Chair. And first of all, I would like to thank my learned colleague from Rowellan for submitting this motion on the Strangford Portaferry Bridge. I welcome the motion, and the SDLP group here in Erie Mourne and Down District Council will be supporting the overall aims and aspirations of same. The vision of the proposed bridge over the Narrows has been around for many years, and the SDLP in time has been one of building bridges, community ways, etc., and the vision of the late Eddie McGrady, PJ Bradley and many others over the years in regards to the Narrow Water Bridge. There were setbacks along the way, but the vision, drive and determination finally have resulted in the Narrow Water Bridge coming to fruition and then the opening of the same now in sight. It shows what can be done, and in relation to tonight's motion, this echoes, if I stand corrected, the mirrors one that was submitted in Ards North down Borough Council recently. my SDLP colleague on the same council, Joe Boyle, had contacted the Infrastructure Minister, Liz Kimmins, on the 2nd of January of this year, asking for a feasibility study incorporating all aspects. So that a feasibility study that should be commissioned and presented and asked for this request to be expedited. And some of the points raised, you know, and were replied to, such as approximate costings and would the DFI pick up the cost, and how much this would cost and where the funding would come from, but and would any future developments be sent off by the whole executive? And also at the same time paying tribute to the ferry staff who do such a fantastic job all year and in all weathers. But on the 22nd of January, Councillor Bowsey, Minister Liz did reply to Councillor Boyle stating that the transport plans, pardon the pun, are key drivers. And the connection between Port of Ferry Strangford is in the Eastern Transport Plan 2035, and in this and in correspondence, the Minister outlined that within the current planning framework, there is no immediate need for a fixed crossing here against the plan's objectives for delivery by 2035. But in finishing up, and based on what I've mentioned in my contribution to this motion about all the hard work that was done, and despite the hiccups along the way, we are now in the home straight with the Narrowwater Bridge. This has been delivered, and with the right cocktail of funding, this can happen too across the Narrows between Strangford and Port of Ferry. And in wrapping up, the SDLP will be back in the motion that has been presented here this evening. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Speaking on behalf of our party, in principle, we are supportive of the motion, Councillor Bowsey, but taking consideration the current financial constraints we have in the Department for Infrastructure, but in principle, Sinn Féin is the motion. Councillor Young.
Thanks, Chair. Alliance, we're happy to support this. We would hope to see within the feasibility study the following three areas covered: road upgrades either side, viability of a more sustainable ferry, mindful of the special scientific interest and special area of conservation status. To manage increased traffic, roads either side of the lock would need significant upgrades. Sustainable ferry travel options in Belfast are expanding with a strong focus on reducing carbon footprints through new technologies, green hybrid vessels and electric hydrofoils. Belfast Bangor Pilot is a 30-minute passenger route between Belfast Titanic Quarter and Bangor Marina. It's planned utilising this boiler technology. And Stenaline, as the primary operator connecting Belfast to GB, has already made significant investments in sustainability. Strangford Lock is the largest sea inlet in the British Isles and Northern Ireland's first marine conservation zone. It's renowned special area of conservation and special protection area. Those titles are not just handed out for no good designable reason, but we are happy to support a feasibility study. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor Young. Councillor Taylor?
Yep, thanks, Chair. Again, very briefly, just outline my support for the motion brought forward by Councillor Bowsey. I think, as already has been referenced, one of the, I suppose, the biggest issues achieving something like this would be bringing forward the necessary for achieving or identifying the necessary finance for any such project, but at the very least a feasibility study can identify the various issues that there may be or not be in respect of such a proposal. So I think at the very least the Minister should look at this favourably and take that forward and see where we are after that there. Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. Mr. Bowsey.
For the vote then.
So, we are in agreement with the agenda.
Yeah, I'd just like to thank everybody for their support and give credit to Michelle McElveen, MLA, our deputy leader, who launched this campaign 3 months ago, along with her ARDS and our ARDS DEP councillors. She brought the motion to their council in February, which was fully supported. So it's great that we have the support of both councils on either side of the log for studying Deer Bridge. And it's fantastic that we're only 3 months in, and already this DUP campaign has the support of the Sinn Féin MP for South Down. And it's incredible to think that he made his announcement only 4 days after I submitted my motion. So what a coincidence. But, yeah, if any of you are speaking to Mr. Hazard, do pass on my warmest appreciation to him for his backing. That's all, Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Bowsey. Moving on to item 13, Notice of motion, there is a National Constraints Payments Bill. Mr. Rice, would you like to speak to your motion and inform us as to your second it?
Gurmi, I've got chair. This council notes the introduction of the Area of Natural Constraints Payments Bill in the Assembly. This council recognises the importance of the areas of natural constraints, payments and sustaining family farms, supporting rural communities and maintaining agricultural activity in marginal and upland areas. This council welcomes the bill's requirement that the Department of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs make regulations under the Agricultural Act 2020 to ensure continued and inflation-linked payments to eligible farmers. This council calls on all parties in the Assembly and the Minister of Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs to support and progress the legislation without delay. Chair, in speaking of support of this motion and backing the ANC bill, which is legislation that is not only necessary but long overdue for farmers in South Down and across the North, this directly affects many farming families in our own communities across the Mourns and wider South Down who are trying to make a living in some of the most challenging agricultural conditions on these islands. We are talking about fields that climb the slopes of the Mourne Mountains, small family farms scattered across our uplands and the communities that have lived and worked that land for generations. In South Down, a significant number of farms are located in severely disadvantaged areas, about 99 farms in total. If the recent figures from the department are correct, these are predominantly small, family-run farms, often operating on marginal land with poor soil, difficult terrain, and limited options for diversification. They are livestock farms, predominantly beef, cows and sheep, and they form the backbone of our rural economy. Yet despite their importance, they are under immense pressure. Before the previous ANC scheme ended, the average farm in South Down received just over £2,200 a year. That was not a luxury and it was not excessive. It was the difference between staying afloat and going under. It meant that there was one less bill to worry about. However, since its removal, many of these farms have been pushed further into financial difficulty. The reality is stark. Farms in disadvantaged areas are already operating on razor thin margins. Data shows that many are running at a loss, losses that will deepen significantly without direct support. These are not large agribusinesses. They are small holdings, often between 3 and 10 hectares, where families are working incredibly hard simply to keep the farm going and often supplementing income with off-farm work. So let's be clear, this bill is about survival, but it's also a bit much more than that, because upland farming is not isolated. It's interconnected with the entire agricultural ecosystem. Across the north, a significant proportion of breeding beef, cattle and sheep are located in disadvantaged areas. These animals form the foundation of the wider red meat sector. Lowland farmers depend on upland farmers to supply the livestock they finish. If these upland farms decline, the evidence shows, and that they already are, the consequences will ripple across the entire supply chain. We've already seen a 21% drop in beef cattle numbers over the past decade, and further decline in sheep numbers just in the last year. These are not abstract statistics, these are warning signs, and we must take them seriously. This bill creates a legal framework to allow the scheme to exist. Funding decisions will follow through the appropriate budgetary process through monitoring around reallocations and prioritisation within the department. And we know there's flexibility within the system. We have seen reduced department requirements in multiple areas. We know there's significant sums are spent elsewhere. For example, over $70 million annually on the disasters TB policies. So the question is not whether the money exists, it's where the political will exists to prioritise this. Jeremy, I'll get chair and I'll advise that Councillor Brown will be seconding.
Councillor Brown, would you like to speak to the motion?
No, just second it, Chair, thanks.
Councillor Riley.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, as of June 2025, there are 25,834 active farmers in Northern Ireland, with the majority being small family farms. The new Farm Sustainability Payment, FSP, has $336 million agreed. The new area-based scheme, launched on the 1st of January 2026, is aimed at supporting active farming, environmental standards and productivity. Now, a mandatory ANC scheme, as proposed by Councillor Rice, would have to be funded from within the existing agriculture budget. reducing financial support from other farm businesses under the farm sustainability payments. That disparity in treatment would deepen as there is a proposal in the PMB to link ANC payments to inflation, something which is not afforded to any other element of the sustainable agriculture programme. So where's the fairness in that? Rather than regressive further area-based payments not linked to productivity, we want to see programmes focused towards efficiency and resilience in order to support profitable and sustainable agricultural activity everywhere in Northern Ireland. We support the need for a designated sheep scheme, for example, which would have a significant positive impact on SDAs, or severely disadvantaged areas, where over half of all our sheep are located. These farmers already contribute significantly to the environment and rural communities, providing employment on farms across the supply chain, and the sector is a multiplier for the Northern Ireland economy more generally. We want to see tailored support building on previous work done by the Northern Ireland Sheep Industry Task Force to safeguard these family farms for the next generation. That means providing help to invest in infrastructure, equipment and technology, which will increase productivity and lead to the improved animal health and welfare. The farming community is deeply frustrated by Minister Muir's lack of urgency and action on the findings of the task force report, which would, if implemented, have a very significant improvement for disadvantaged areas and farmers in disadvantaged areas. But we need to tackle head-on this misconception that farms in seriously disadvantaged areas are deprived of financial support, or now find themselves in a worse situation that was previously the case. Since the ending of ANC payments 8 years ago, there has been no significant change to agriculture in less favoured areas relative to the lowland in Northern Ireland or in livestock numbers or farmed areas. The move to a land-based payment has actually seen more funding under the basic payment scheme move from the lowland to disadvantaged areas and severely disadvantaged area land types, compensating for the loss of the old ANC scheme. Land eligibility rules for the 2026 FSP mean that previously ineligible land such as scrub, rushes and bracken can now be claimed for, and this is intended to support environmental goals and biodiversity, and we encourage farmers to make sure that they get their applications in. The single application period opened on March the 2nd of this year with a final application deadline of June 9th, and we encourage all active farmers to get their applications in. Entitlement transfers open to March 10th and close on May 15th, and it is extremely important that farmers get their applications in. And it's also important to note for farmers in disadvantaged areas that there's a suckler cow scheme in operation from the 1st of April this year, which will greatly assist farmers in that area and in disadvantaged areas. And in summary, Chairman, the DUP wants to ensure that as much support cash as possible goes into the farmer's pocket. We want less bureaucracy and time-consuming form filling. We want efficiency and clear direction from DERA, given that the agricultural support package is already in place. We in the DUP cannot support this motion tonight, given the factual information that I have given in as part of this motion. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Riley. Councillor Taylor.
Thank you, Chair. The bill, obviously the motion has been outlined by Councillor Rice this evening. The bill was presented in the Assembly in recent weeks at the second stage of reading, and my party offered conditional support to that, as it was about looking at the intent of the bill. And whilst there are some aspects of it have good intent, there are still areas to grapple with. There are areas in which my party requires significant clarity before it can move beyond that conditional support. The first pillar of that would be funding. Where does the money come from? Is it a reallocation of existing DERA budgets, or is there new investment being proposed as part of this bill? If it is the former, the question has to be asked, which programmes then lose out? If it is the latter, what discussions have there been had, with the Finance Minister, for instance, to identify where that money potentially could come from? There simply can't be a situation where you're shifting pressure from one place to another within that sector. There's also a broader strategic question about whether the bill is part of a coherent long-term agricultural policy, or is it a piecemeal response to the mounting pressures that exist. There are still significant caveats associated with the bill and questions for the Ulster Unionist Party as a result of that, and we must ensure that if funding is deliverable, that it is credible and it is sustainable, and that the support is fairly targeted and outcome-driven. On that basis, I'd be abstaining from offering full support this evening until some of those issues are teased out further. But the bill will obviously continue in its passage to the Assembly, and maybe some of those points that have been raised can be resolved as it goes through that process. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Howie.
Thank you, Chair. And whilst Alliance wants to see farm business working within disadvantaged areas fairly supported, we believe that there are more effective ways to do that and to get better value for public money alongside more sustainable, both financially and environmentally. With the bill passing its second stage, as Councillor Taylor mentioned, it is important that effective scrutiny addresses concerning deficiencies within the bill. Alliance will be seeking to add a conditionality clause to protect nature, as well as further examining the financial impact on other farm support payments, including the built-in inflationary uplift within the bill. The premise of ANC support is to maintain agricultural activity within ANC areas and prevent land abandonment. However, there has been no evidence of significant land abandonment in Northern Ireland. Minister Muir is progressing with schemes and policies that will benefit those farming in ANC through his new Sustainable Agricultural Programme, or SAP. These schemes have been shaped by extensive input from the Agricultural Policy Stakeholder Group, comprising representatives of the food, agri and environmental sector. The new farm sustainability payment also provides already provides support for agriculture activity across Northern Ireland, including in disadvantaged areas, and the rollout and scale up of farming with nature and changes to land eligibility rules will ensure farmers in ANC areas can receive funding for more sustainable land management and reward them for looking after nature and biodiversity. Ultimately, we believe that it would be better to offer financial support for farm businesses to participate in schemes that benefit nature, reduce carbon emissions, improve water quality and promote sustainability in ANC areas, rather than a flat payment for simply owning land in these areas. It is bad practice to tie the hands of the department committing to spending on one single farm support scheme through primary legislation. To do so could risk disadvantaging other farm businesses and undermining the development of the other schemes under the SAP. There is no guarantee that additional money will also be available for the 11.4 million annual payment, despite pledges from the bill sponsor. This is over the double amount ring-fenced for Loch Ney, Chair, which is 5 million annually. If funding does not come from the earmarked budget for agriculture, agri-environment, fisheries and rural development, then other parts of the department will face significant cuts. And also just not note that other UK jurisdictions are phasing out similar types of ANC payments in favour of schemes to support more sustainable land management. So on that note, Chair, I would like to propose an amendment. So after upland areas, we would like to remove everything from there and insert this council supports effective scrutiny of the bill as it progresses through the Assembly, recognising the need to address issues raised during the second stage debate, including the case for adding nature and biodiversity conditionality to the bill. Its affordability, if not funded from the earmarked Sustainable Agricultural Programme budget, and the inherent unfairness of linking payments to inflations when no other farm support measures have the same protections in law. And I can forward that through to everyone if that's helpful, and to yourself.
Councillor Rice, are you willing to accept the amendment to your motion?
I send it to Sarah, and then... Oh, no, be accepted. Okay, that's fine. Doesn't matter. Just
Councillor Howie, can you send it through to Sarah, because we would still have to vote on the amendment.
Just before it's work, in that case, then we will be supporting the motion if the amendment's not accepted.
Well, sorry, I'll wait for.
Keep your horse in the stable.
Very kind. Very kind, but one that you'll accept.
Are you accepting the amendment? Yeah. Councillor Rice. I need you to record it.
Your mic.
No, Chair. So we have to go to the vote.
Just a question, point of order on the amendment for clarity before we vote.
Yes, Councillor.
Yeah, just for clarity on an amendment that the motion calls for payments, inflation linked payments, and the amendment calls for not having inflation linked payments. Is that a direct negative? Because well, you want to support it, it's a direct negative of what's been asked. What we vote.
Yeah, Chair, I'm actually only after Linda Costas Aaron saying it looks like a direct negative, so. Under a sham.
Unaccepted as an amendment because it's a direct negative?
Yeah.
Understand?
Yeah.
Orders?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Mr. Byrne?
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Chair, I'll be brief. I'm not going to go. The number of the points were made from the Assembly debate on both sides, the DUP and Sinn Féin, and obviously the UUP as well, an alliance. So I'm not going to go over them. But I also don't want to get people's hopes up in terms of what we promise at Council in terms of a motion and what it's going to deliver for people. The SDLP, as Councillor Rice knows, supported it at the second reading. And obviously we have questions to ask, like Councillor Taylor said, in terms of where does the funding come from. And just like Cathal King said earlier on, there are questions that we have to interrogate down the line on whether it's external funding that comes out, additional funding to the executive. If it's in the department, what suffers, all that has to be teased out at the committee stage. I think the UUP were happy enough for that to go forward, but to tease out those questions afterwards and not just shut it down at that stage. And I think we all should find ourselves in that position. At the end of the day, half of the farm and agricultural land in the north is on poor land, 448,000 hectares, I think it was in the Assembly debate. And since that payment was stopped in 2018, those farms have suffered. I know Tierna said that there hasn't been land abandonment, but there has been dramatic herd decreases and farmers have been struggling. And let's be clear, that was European funding through the rural development, European funding of 20 million, and that has to be replaced. Councillor Rice said in his closing comments, I was wondering where the funding was coming from, that there are savings to be made, and he talked about TB inside the department itself. That's discussions that have to be had at DRN. And if there are savings to be made within the department, all well and good. But I'd rather stick by the position of the Ulster Farmers Union provided that it is additional funding and doesn't affect the SFP, the FSP, as Councillor Reilly said, because we can't take from one and give to the other. That's simply not fair. We also can't have legislation passed at the Assembly, which is linked to increase year on year on inflation, and no other programme is linked to inflationary raises, because as it raises year on year, it takes away from somewhere else. So you're taking away from lowland farms to support the upland and the lower arable land farms. And that's not a debate that we should be having here. We talk about the EU funding. We look at the scheme for the ANC scheme down the south. €250 million put into the same scheme down the south. But €190 million of that is from EU funding. We're not going to find that money within inside the executive. There are already constraints on the executive in all departments to find budgets. We're robbing from Peter to pay Paul. So it is poor leadership for us to go out and say that we're going to support something that we can't fund or deliver. It is also poor leadership to remove a programme and then vote against or propose to vote against and done in the Assembly any attempt to reinstate that programme to help farmers. So I fully support the motion as is. I have a slight amendment to the motion. And the amendment is in line with the Ulster Farmers Union. I'll give the wording of the amendment. It comes after the second paragraph. Hang on to go back to the funding. After inflation-linked payments to eligible farmers. And provided that it is funded through additional resources that are separate from existing direct agricultural support funding. And that's the only line that's been added in. And I want to explain that to Councillor Rice before he says yes or no to it. The Ulster Farmers Union supports the motion, but has that caveat that it is additional funding that does not take from direct agricultural support. That does not mean that it doesn't come from within the executive, as you said. It may come, as you talk about TB and other savings in the executive. That could be within the executive. It could be additional funding. It leaves the scope open for it to come from inside or out, but not taken from another fund. So that's the only, because if we go out, and we say, and that's the final point I make, if we go out and we support a piece of legislation that passes, like the hospital car parking motion that we had passed at the end of the last mandate, and we get into the new mandate and we've no funding to deliver it, we have to keep delaying, delaying, delaying. We've raised people's expectations, we've brought them back down because we can't deliver it. So at least have that open and link us to the Ulster Farmers Union caveat as well. So that's my amendment, but we're happy to support the motion.
Thanks, Chair. While what Pete said isn't in the wording of the motion, it's in the wording of the bill. It's quite clear that any funding isn't to come from repackaged money that's taken, rather from Peter to pay Paul, sort of. So I'll accept Councillor Byrne's motion, but what I'm trying to say is that that is caveated within the bill.
Chair, just to be fair, if Michael wants to add on, provided that it's funded through additional resources, separate from existing direct agricultural support funding, add it on to that line, you know, as long as it's in there.
Councillor Rice, you're happy to accept, yes?
Yeah.
Okay. Good. And indeed. Councillor Rennie, my
sure,
apologies.
Yeah, it was just on what Pete said about the Southern budget. The Southern budget is managed through the Common Farm Policy, Common Agricultural Policy, and they're spending €520 million a year for 110,000 farmers, whereas we got over £320 million for 25,000 farmers. So, and we have the flexibility now that we're out of the EU, so they have to really concentrate on this issue and make sure that the money actually goes to the farmer and is not caught up in bureaucracy and paperwork. Thanks, Chairman.
Thank you, Councillor Reilly. So, will it record a vote?
Councillor Andrews?
For.
Councillor Bousy?
Against.
Councillor Brennan?
For.
Councillor Byrne?
For.
Councillor Campbell?
For.
Councillor Clark?
For.
Councillor Devlin? Councillor Enright is absent. Councillor Fain?
For.
Councillor Finn? Councillor Galbraith?
For.
Councillor Gibbons is absent. Councillor Hanlon?
For.
Councillor Hannah?
Against.
Councillor Hart? Councillor Hardy? Councillor Howell?
For.
Councillor Howey?
Against.
Councillor Jackson.
Against.
Councillor Kearns. Councillor Orlaking.
For.
Councillor Cahill-King.
For.
Councillor Larkin.
For.
Councillor Lawler.
For.
Councillor Lee Searchner is absent. Councillor Lewis. Councillor McGuinness. Councillor Mathers. Councillor McAteer is absent. Councillor Declan Murphy. Councillor Kate Murphy. Councillor Selena Murphy. Councillor O'Hare. Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley.
Against.
Councillor Rice.
For.
Councillor Wan.
For.
Councillor Taylor.
Abstain.
Councillor Tunnelly. Councillor Truesdale. Councillor Young. I have 28 for, 8 against, and 1 abstention.
The motion is passed. Councillor Rice, would you like to sum up?
Chair, what I would say that the fundamental point that's been missed is that not all land is equal. Farmers in upland areas face higher costs, lower productivity, and fewer options to diversify. What I would say, and I think Henry knows the answer, or the response he would get if we went into Kilkeel Harbour tomorrow and told them that they needed to diversify and become more financially viable without further support. Regarding the Stuttgart Cow Scheme, farmers in these areas find it harder to keep within the year. I'm not getting into all that because that's getting into the biology of it all. Respect with the amendment that was carried, but this was carried within the bill, and what I would also add is that that was key in securing the Ulster Farmer Union's support in the consultation before the bill was read into the Assembly. So, I'd say, discussed it here enough tonight, so thanks very much, Chair, and thanks very much for the support.
Thank you very much, Councillor Rice. Moving on to item number 16, notice of motion, wastewater infrastructure, Councillor Feehan. Councillor Feehan, would you like to speak to your motion and inform us as to who is seconded?
Yes, thanks very much, Chair. So, the motion will be seconded by Councillor Andrews, and it is that this Council notes the growing social, economic and environmental crisis caused by lack of capacity within the district's wastewater infrastructure, which is impeding housing and commercial development. Recognises that NI Water has identified 9 wastewater treatment works locally which do not have any available capacity, and a further 9 with capacity issues, also identifying its networks in Uri, Sainfield and Kilkeel as high polluting. Council notes the contents of the recent report, Uri Next, Building a Regional Powerhouse by 2035, which indicates that wastewater constraints are blocking 1,300 housing units and planning locally, and that 29 major commercial schemes have been delayed. Recognises the extraordinary pressures on housing supply in the Newry Morne and Down District Council area and the consequent increase in local house purchase and rent prices. Council registers its concern at further evidence of the housing crisis in the Newry Morne and Down District Council area. 3,922 applicants on the social housing waiting list, of which 3,207 are in housing stress, the third highest level in the north. 1,197 housing units recommended for refusal by NI Water, and a further 122 units that will not get a connection to the public foul network due to closed catchments. Only 385 new housing starts locally, quarter one to quarter three 2025, the third lowest in the north, and the highest annual rent increases in Northern Ireland at 7.2%, and the highest annual house price increases in Northern Ireland at 12.4%. The Council therefore agrees to take the following actions. Write to the Minister for Infrastructure requesting that she confirms that the long-term funding required by NI Water to upgrade its wastewater infrastructure locally will be provided, and commission an independent review of NI Water's funding and governance arrangements as recommended by the Northern Ireland Audit Office. Thirdly, that we invite the authors of the Newry Next report to attend a special council meeting to interrogate the recommendations of the report and ascertain the necessary action required to realise its ambition. Chair and members, I know it's not a particularly glamorous motion, but I have brought the motion forward tonight so that we as a chamber can confront a basic reality that the crisis in our water infrastructure is the single biggest impediment to the long-term development of this area. I want to be really, really clear that in bringing this motion forward tonight, I am not seeking to apportion blame. This motion is simply about acknowledging a constraint that is now clearly evidenced, and it's about taking sensible, constructive steps to address it. So we all know the facts. A significant number of treatment works locally have no remaining capacity, with others operating under pressure. We know that this is already impacting on development It's preventing homes from being built. It's delaying major commercial projects from progressing. In other words, the crisis in our wastewater infrastructure is choking investment, it's costing us jobs, and it's preventing homes from being built during a housing crisis. I mentioned in the motion that the cost of buying or renting a house in Newry, Mourne and Down rose faster last year than anywhere else in Northern Ireland. Not second, not near the top of the table. Faster, the top of the table. Nowhere did it become more expensive or was there a bigger jump in the cost of buying or renting a home than in this district. We need to unblock the pipeline of development and get more homes built. That is the reason that I have brought this motion forward, to start a conversation about how best to do that. Firstly, the motion asks for clarity from the Infrastructure Minister on long-term funding for wastewater infrastructure. I don't believe that that's an unreasonable request. It's a request about ensuring that the system has the capacity to support planned growth and to meet existing need. Secondly, the motion supports the recommendation for an independent review of NI Water's funding and governance arrangements. Again, I believe that this is a pragmatic step. If there are any structural issues that are preventing progress within NI Waters, it is in everyone's interests that those structural issues are examined and addressed in an open and transparent way. Thirdly, the motion proposes that we engage directly with the authors of the Newry Next report. I believe that inviting them to a special council meeting in the same way that we have engaged with statutory agencies like NI Water and the Housing Executive would put us in a position to test their evidence, better understand the challenges, scrutinise the suggestions that they have advanced in their report, and consider how we as a council can play our part in enabling solutions. I want to re-emphasise that my intention by bringing this motion forward tonight is not to treat this issue as a political football, but to recognise that this is a significant challenge that requires a strong response from across the chamber. I believe that the focus of everyone in this chamber should be on working together and using evidence to advocate for the people that we represent. Because if we want to see more homes built and more sustainable economic development, if we want to see this district thrive and ease the existing pressure on households, then I believe that water infrastructure needs to move to the top of the executive's priority list. And I hope that members across the chamber can support this motion on that basis. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Fain. Councillor Hannah? Thanks, Andrews, to bring you in now.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks to the councillors for allowing me to come up to the top of the queue to second this motion. And I do agree very much with the sentiments expressed in the motion. And I know an opening few lines of the motion has been highlighting the capacity issues. And I know as a Rowallan councillor and the other Rowallan councillors, the same, we have been doing a bit of work on capacity issues regarding Saintfield Calais, etc. And again, as I say, it's a very good motion, and I'm only too happy to second the motions before us, and looking for support to move forward with the what's in the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Andrews. Councillor Hannah.
Thanks, Chair. This is our position in this year on the wastewater infrastructure. The DUP fully recognises that wastewater infrastructure constraints are now a critical barrier to housing development, economic growth and investment. We would like to see an infrastructure review commissioned more generally in Northern Ireland to better assess whether we are funded to the relevant need. Quite simply, without functioning infrastructure, development cannot proceed and communities are paying the price. There is no doubt that significant long-term investment is required, and we support calls to secure that funding. However, the issue goes beyond funding alone. The Northern Ireland Audit Office has already raised serious concerns about governance and oversight arrangements, a lack of long-term strategic planning, and constraints within the current funding model. With many previous recommendations outstanding, do we really need yet another independent review to tell us what has gone wrong? Critically, there are also real questions about delivery capacity. Even if funding were made available, there are legitimate doubts as to whether NI Water currently has the workforce skills and expertise required to scale up delivery. We are now open to exploring options that would grant NI Water borrowing powers, but only where protections are in place for vulnerable households. Investment in wastewater must also be fairly distributed and does not reinforce regional imbalance. In summary, this is not just about spending more. It's about ensuring structurally the system is capable of delivering the infrastructure Northern Ireland needs. Gordon Lyon has also sought to use the tools at his disposal to increase housing supply, including through the introduction of intermediate rent scheme and increasing the co-ownership property value to support those trying to buy a home. Contribution, Chair.
What's Councillor Murphy?
Thanks, Chair, and thanks, Cillian, for giving us this opportunity to discuss this issue. Of course, it is an issue that many of us, either have had experience, from it, people that have lobbied us or our own personal experience. But just to maybe raise a few of the points that you have mentioned there. You know, you said you're not going to apportion blame. I think that misses an opportunity. Most, if not all, of the executive parties have said quite clearly. In fact, the DUP, Gavin Robinson, has more or less laboured on this quite a bit, that there isn't enough money being brought into the north from Westminster. If you ignore that, if you don't have that, and it's not in this motion, and that's a difficulty for me, if you ignore that, all you're doing is providing cover for the people that are responsible for the lack of funding to the departments. And that's a problem, and that very much is a problem for Sinn Féin. And with regards to an independent review, well, the existing model that's in place, that model was put in place in 2021. The paper itself was brought to the executive by a former colleague of yours, Nicola Mallon. For another review to take place, you're going to come up with the same, they'll come up with the same solutions, and that is more water charges or maybe even privatisation. We have stated clearly we're not for water charges. So that's Sinn Féin's position. So just to address some of the issues, and I will be looking for maybe some amendments if that's okay. So wastewater management is not a new issue. It is the bane of all the political parties, our constituents, developers and investors for many decades. This is nothing new. I'm sure many in the chamber would agree this is a high-maintenance department with totally inadequate budget. However, what is important is that the work of this department is solution-based, and those solutions are both feasible and viable. And I think it's also important that we acknowledge the work that has been done. Again, I haven't seen that in this motion. So our position is our three-pronged approach is the best attempt at unlocking capacity, because everybody agrees we do need more housing, and that's not going to happen unless we have a solution for wastewater. The three prongs are, one, the introduction of sustainable urban drainage legislation. That's now being progressed through committee. Two, the introduction of developer contributions. The Minister has moved forward with a voluntary scheme to begin with the view of moving to monastery. And three, increased investment supported by the entire executive. NI Water's chief executive is also emphatic that all the prongs will deliver success, albeit increased funding will provide the biggest opportunity. In the 25-26 budget, NI Water received 86% of what it identified it could deliver. And when the additional funding that the Minister secured in June monitoring is taken into consideration, this increased it to almost 90% of the ask, which is a significant level of investment in our water and wastewater infrastructure. In 2025, December monitoring, $4.1 million was allocated for drinking water infrastructure, which supports housing development as well as improving water quality. It is also our firm view that agreeing a multi-year budget would allow the department to provide NI Water with a clearer budget position to plan investments more strategically. Since both John O'Dowd and Liz Kimmins have come into office, they have announced the unlocking of wastewater capacity for over 5,000 properties, showing what can be achieved when ministers are focused on solutions. For instance, NIW's original plans would only unlock capacity for 4,300 houses from 2021 to 2027, but our ministers have gone beyond that by finding a way to prioritise spending for unlocking housing in recognition of the challenges. Improvements to wastewater infrastructure needs additional funding and therefore requires adequate funding from the British government and political support from the entire executive. In the north, we need to see more social and affordable homes built. Sinn Féin has increased support for renters, implemented rent freezes for social housing tenants, and are seeking to ban unfair lending fees and prevent homelessness. And there is unquestionably a need for greater strategic investment in infrastructure on a cross-border basis. To use this, and this is where I have a big issue with this particular motion, because I don't think you've done this. We should be using this motion and every opportunity to lobby Westminster for adequate funding. Otherwise, if we don't do that, and this is, you said that this isn't a political football, but that's clearly what I see it as, because this is merely political party point scoring. If you're not addressing the source of the problem, all we're doing is pointing out some of the difficulties that our colleagues in the executive have to deal with, likewise with previous ministers had to deal with in the past. Any motion that we bring on to the floor of this chamber should be solution-based and should, I think, otherwise we're missing the opportunity, go to the core of the difficulty or of the problem, and that is a serious lack of funding. Even the DUP, as I say, have lobbied for this, like with other parties, but even the Tories acknowledged it. You know, they said under Boris Johnson that they simply haven't provided what is required for public services in the north. And unfortunately, the Labour Party came in and they just followed with the policy of austerity. So, if you don't mind, I would put a number, if you can just bear with me, changes to your motion. So, it says this council notes, right, and right down to which is impeding housing and commercial development. After that, if you can include, recognises that the North's executive is chronically underfunded and is trying to deliver public services in the context of decades of British government austerity and underinvestment in critical infrastructure. That's one amendment. And then if you go down a couple of sentences later, just the sentence that finishes with a polluting, if you add to that, welcomes the Minister for Infrastructure's innovative approach to these issues, particularly the announced increased capacity at Newry and Ansborough, that's Castlewellan treatment facilities, and also welcomes her commitment to pursuing resolution to these issues. If you go down to the next few lines, and if you can delete, where you say, which indicates that wastewater constraints are blocking, rather than blocking, put in delaying. Well, that. And then, wait for this. Go right down to the very bottom, where it says, council therefore agrees to take the following actions. And if you can include in that, right to the Communities Minister, requesting that he outlines his plans for investment in housing across Newry, Morne and Down. Then, further down, right to the Minister for Infrastructure, requesting that she, and if you can delete, confirms that the long term, and but it includes, outlines her plans for the funding of, and deletes required by, so it outlines her plans for the funding of NI Water to upgrade its wastewater infrastructure locally, and deletes will be provided. If you can then, and again, this is just, as I don't see the point in this, the bullet point that you have commission an independent review of NI Water's funding and governance arrangements as recommended by the Northern Ireland Office. It's another independent commission. It's going to come up with exactly the same answers, and answers that are not acceptable, not just by Sinn Féin, but by, I'd say, the majority of the people in the North. So, Sinn Féin, that's it.
Hey, Mr. Murphy, has that been sent through? Mr. Payne, are you willing to accept the amendments? Okay. Yes. In a German? Yeah. Close. Okay.
Seconder
for the German?
Yeah.
Yes.
I got scrubbed out. Everyone,
we can tell.
That was from five. I'm not sure. Only two checks. That is how. Two checks. One check.
Okay. So, Councillor Meehan, would you accept the amendments?
Just after lengthy talks there with Councillor Murphy, I'm sad. Sad to report that he won't be joining the SDLP. I did try. Yes, we've agreed not on the original set, sort of chronicle of amendments that Councillor Murphy had sent through, but we have worked together there, and Councillor Hanlon has emailed Sarah with a compromise, so if Sarah would be happy to circulate that to councillors, then I'm happy for the vote to be taken on what Sarah has there now.
Okay. We want a conference. More than happy to apply. Okay, so.
I've only had two chapters left. I'm way back.
For fear of cabin fever creaking in here, guys, so can we have, are we in agreement?
Chair, I was going to speak, I near forgot what I was going to speak on, actually. But listen, I'll hear what Councillor Fain has to say before.
Chair has just circulated the amended motion.
Hello? Yes, Chairman.
Mr. Taylor, you're looking at it?
Yeah.
Who is it? Right.
Briefly, with Gambles, the night's going on, and obviously you have to get reading the amendment. But it's just it was a general comment, just obviously to acknowledge that the wastewater infrastructure, you know, is a significant issue for us here in Northern Ireland. It does demand priority attention. We're in a situation where the impacts of underfunding are profound and far-reaching, and it's turning into a crisis that requires action in terms of strategic investment and potential changes to governance. We are facing limitations in providing new water and sewage connections, you know, with that for household and commercial developments, and that's leading to construction delays and stalled projects as a result of that. And in turn, It is restricting our economic growth and resulting potentially in missed investment opportunities as well. But take the opportunity to read the amended proposal that's in front of us, Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Reilly.
Yes, Chairman. I was just going to say I largely support the motion, but I would remind the proposer that there are people selling semis in Dublin and Drogheda and coming to Warren Point and Uri and buying big houses or buying two or three houses from rent tonight. And his party, not that long ago, wanted to build 2,000 homes specifically for Southerners to come up here to commute to Dublin. So put our own people first, the ordinary working class people of Newry and Mourne first, and stop worrying about free staters.
Mr. Bosey.
Can I just clarify who's actually proposing these amendments? Is motion mover actually making these amendments, or is it coming from Councillor Murphy?
And can
he actually read them into the record? Because there's people that are listening online and things, media and things, and people in the gallery, so he can actually tell us what the amendment is. Well,
Mr. Beale?
Jeepers, the DUP had their Weetabix this morning. The comment from Councillor, Reilly, you're saying look after our own people. Dublin, Belfast, Cork and Donegal, those are all my people, so I reject that argument. The second part of that is that, I mean, there's a housing crisis here. That's well documented, and you've agreed to that in terms of your support for the motion. I think it would be pedantic to start splitting hairs over who eventual occupants of houses might be. Houses need built, and we need to unblock and unlock progress in order to do that. To Councillor Bowsey's point, Chair, would you like for me to read the amended motion to answer his first question? The amendments to the motion were submitted by Councillor Murphy. Councillor Murphy and I think it's obviously obvious that we had a conversation about the extent and the nature of those amendments. So the motion as amended, I'm happy to read if that's required.
At your discretion, Councillor Fain, it's your motion.
I mean, I think everybody online there got the same email as we all got. Would you prefer if I read it? Pardon me? Through the chair, of course, Callum. So I'll, if it satisfies you, I'll read the amended motion. So, excuse me. The proposed.
Sure, we can email it to those on the press. If you're content with that.
Happy days.
We can also chat. We'll put it on the chat of Teams for today.
Perfect. So we'll thank you.
Remember that, Councillor Payne? Okay, thank you. So we are in agreement. Councillor Payne, would you like to sum up?
Not particularly, no. Thanks very much to everybody for their comments. Thanks in particular to Councillor Murphy, to Councillor Hannan and Councillor Hart for their time in working through some of those amendments. Like I said at the start, obviously there's always going to be somebody from a particular political party that holds the Minister for Infrastructure's post. As it happens, I actually had the highest regard for Minister Kinnan's. I know her on a personal level to be very warm and courteous, and I know as a constituency representative she's excellent. So like I said at the start, the purpose behind bringing this forward was to highlight and start a conversation around an issue that I believe is flying under the radar but holding us back. And I think that the conversation definitely was started. Perhaps it was too long a conversation for some, but I'm very grateful to everybody for their input, and I hope that we can just get this passed now and on to the next. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Fien. And move on to item number 17 on the agenda. It's a motion for cold water swimming facilities at Terrell Beach. Councillor Lewis.
Chair, I am happy for the motion to be as read and just sent to AHC.
No worries. This council notes the growing popularity of cold water swimming across the district, including at Terrell Beach, which provides a picturesque and accessible natural setting for such activity. Council further notes the recognised physical and mental health benefits associated with cold water swimming, including improved circulation, reduced stress levels, and enhanced mood, and its increasing use as a complementary activity promoted through health and initiatives. This council acknowledges that the number of organised groups and individuals make regular use of Perella Beach throughout the year, including during the winter months, often without access to appropriate holidays. Accordingly, this council agrees to engage with local cold water swimming groups to assess current usage and demand, assess the feasibility of opening existing shower and changing facilities at Perella Beach during the winter period, consider the introduction of a pilot scheme to provide such facilities with a view to garden demand, usage and overall benefit. This council further agrees that a such a pilot scheme will be reviewed following its implementation to inform future provision. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Lucy, seconding.
Council or advising.
And just for the record, under Standard Number 16.1.6, that's to be heard in the committee. Okay. So, moving on to item number 18 on the agenda, and that's the motion, an adequacy of $70 million fund for Northern Ireland's households. On the motion received from Councillor Kearns. Councillor Kearns, you speak to your motion, and will you tell us your second, please?
Chair, this council recognises the immense pressure being placed on workers, families and businesses as a result of huge price hikes on energy costs, especially home heating oil as a result of the US-Israeli war on Iran. Notes that homes across Newry, Mourne and Down, like the rest of the north, are predominantly heated by home heating oil, making us much more vulnerable to price shocks. Acknowledge that we are already in the midst of a cost of living crisis, and workers, families and business here need real support. Calls on the Communities Minister, who has a responsibility for tackling fuel poverty, to set up a scheme to get this money into the pockets of those who are struggling with heating costs. The illegal US-Israeli war on Iran has driven up energy costs massively. Many workers, families and business already suffering in the midst of a cost of living crisis now find themselves at the brink. Fuel protests have erupted across Ireland, and it is long past time for both the British and the Irish governments to step up to the mark and deliver real, meaningful support for people now. Inaction or half measures are not acceptable. Homes and business in the north are highly dependent on the oil as a means for heating their property. Over 62% of homes here use oil, as opposed to between 3 and 5% homes in England, Scotland and Wales. They need help now. In relation to the North, only the British government has the economic firepower to deliver a financial package that actually provides the help that people need. They have failed to do so. Only the British government has the power to cut fuel tax for workers, families and businesses here. Again, they have failed to do so. What they have done is allocate approximately $17 million to the north for home heating oil support only. This is a slap in the face to the people here. It won't even touch the surface of what is required to support our communities. It is even more insulting as the British government is set to spend an extra $13.4 billion per year on weapons of war. Billions for munitions, pittance for hard-working families. Proof if ever was needed that Westminster doesn't care about people here. Petrol, diesel and home heating oil prices are extraordinarily high and are likely to rise in the coming weeks. People cannot cope with these unaffordable prices. Action is well overdue. And Councillor Quinn is going to second it.
Mr. Quinn, would you like to speak to the motion?
Yeah, Chair, thanks. There will be a slight amendment that I forwarded on to Sarah that will just be added on to it to say, and this council further calls on the British government to end its inadequate and delayed response to the fuel crisis and to act with urgency that it demands to protect households, sustain local businesses and safeguard our rural economy. And also to write to the British Secretary of State for the North and the Minister of State for Energy to clearly convey this council's deep frustration at their failure to act and to demand immediate delivery of real, effective support for those struggling with the rising energy crisis. The rapid rise in energy, fuel and fertiliser costs is pushing farmers to the brink. This is landing on top of what is already an extremely difficult environment for our farming families and rural communities, and it exposes once again the failure of the British government to act with the urgency that this crisis demands. Agricultural diesel has increased by more than 60%. Fertiliser costs have also increased. Across Ireland, farmers are being squeezed from every direction, and many family farms are now facing a very uncertain future. And in border communities like my own, South Armagh, the pressure is even more severe. People here are dealing with the consequences of decisions that are taken by two governments and failure of both to get to grips with reality on the ground. Rising costs on either side of the border are hitting households, farms and small businesses. Workers are being forced into impossible choices, whether to heat their homes or to put fuel in their cars to go to work. Families are cutting back on the basics to keep going. The British government must bring forward a meaningful and immediate package of support, not half measures and not delayed responses, but real action to protect local food production and sustain our agri-food sector. Because what is happening now is a slow erosion of rural life. South Armagh and South Down are home to some of the finest food producers anywhere on these isles. Strong, resilient communities, but communities are now being pushed to breaking point. While the British government can find billions for weapons and warfare, farming families and rural communities here are being left behind to burden the rising costs alone, and this is unacceptable. We need to speak with one clear voice, united, and a demand an immediate intervention. Because the crisis does not exist in a vacuum. It's being driven by global instability, reckless geopolitical decisions, and that have sent energy markets into turmoil. And once again, it's ordinary people far removed from those decisions who are paying the price. And here at home, it exposes something that we already know. Partition does not work for our communities. It does not work when it comes to managing our economy. It does not work when it comes to energy security. And it does not work when it comes to responding to crises like this. For people living along the border, there is no neat divide, only the daily reality of rising costs, duplicated systems and lack of coordination. This is why the case for Irish unity has never been more relevant, not an abstract idea, but as a practical common sense solution. A new and united Ireland would allow us to plan for our economy, secure our energy, respond to crises of the interests of our people, not in fragmented, disconnected ways that leave border communities some of the worst affected. This council must send a strong message that we stand with our workers, we stand with our family and farmers, and we stand with our small communities and businesses, and that we do not accept that they are being left behind. Sure.
Mr. Kearns, you won't accept that amendment?
Yes.
Mr. Hannah?
Thanks, Chair. This is our position on this here. The DUP recognises the real and growing pressures on households, particularly here where reliance on home heating oil leaves families more exposed than elsewhere, in that 82% of the population in nearly more than 9 11 rural areas and rely very much on oil subsidy for their heating. Yeah, over £17 million equating to around £30 per household is simply not meaningful support given the scale of the challenge. It's important to be clear on responsibility. Energy policy and support schemes sit primarily with the Department of Department for Economy, and future support will require agreement and action across the executive as a whole. Gordon Lyons has demonstrated previously that he will step in with Labour support when it falls within his remit, including administering a winter fuel payment. He stands ready to do so again. That work is ongoing, but let us also not forget the failure of Sinn Féin Economy Minister to develop tangible proposals to administer £81 million of support previously allocated by the United Kingdom government to help households with energy costs. The DUP is clear that all support brought forward should not be narrowly targeted. It should also recognise the pressure on working families, not just those traditionally captured by the welfare system. We are also clear that many of the key levers to address high fuel costs, including fuel duty, VAT, rest with the UK government and the Majesty's Treasury. That is where urgent action is needed to reduce costs at source. The DUP position is therefore funding must be increased by a meaningful level. Delivery mechanisms must be urgently put in place, and both the executive and the UK government must act in a coordinated way to provide real relief.
Thank you, Councillor Hannah. Councillor Gilbreth.
Thanks, Chair. Across Geary, Mourne and Down, families are feeling the real pressure due to the sharp rise in home heating oil. Last month, we've seen an 80% rise in just 1 week. The impact of these rises to Northern Ireland households is profound, given over two-thirds of households here rely on heating oil, compared to a mere 3% in England. Factor in that we live in a largely rural district, where 82% of households rely on oil to heat their homes. That pressure is even more acute for our residents. All of us are hearing stories of people struggling to heat their homes, pensioners having to spend their entire monthly pension on oil, nothing left to put food on the table. And although we are moving into the warmer months, households will be faced with spending the same amount to heat their homes now as they did in winter due to the doubling of oil prices. So the issue before us tonight is not in dispute. People need support, and they need it urgently. Chair, we in the SDLP support the motion, but also recognise a huge gap in it as it stands. The motion focuses primarily on the Communities Minister, but an energy crisis of this scale cannot be addressed by one department alone. It requires a coordinated response from across Northern Ireland Executive. And we say that in the spirit of strengthening what is before us and not opposing it. The motion calls for a scheme to urgently get money into the pockets of those most affected. We support this, but the $17 million allocated for this scheme will not touch the size of the issue. There are around 500,000 homes reliant on home heating oil in Northern Ireland. That equates to £35 per household. The Minister has sat on this funding for over a month now, while other executive parties figure on how it should be spent. I think we all agree that support should be targeted at the most vulnerable, with money getting into people's pockets as quickly as possible. However, while the scope of this motion is not enough to address the issue at hand, Sinn Féin's Finance Minister stated that directly, and so we need to go further to address the fuel crisis people are facing. That's why today the SDLP brought forward a series of practical, deliverable proposals that will provide immediate relief for the public, while also supporting the transition to a more sustainable and secure energy system to ensure we do not end up in a similar position in the future. The Executive's failure to transition up until this point, or even to design systems to target energy support, has left us particularly vulnerable to energy shocks, and the public is paying the price. At a time of global crisis and great uncertainty, people in Northern Ireland need more than an executive acting helpless and a UK government that appears disinterested and disengaged. While we accept there are limits on the executive's resources and powers, there are measures that they can collectively take. The SDLP wish to propose an amendment aimed at making this motion more practical and more deliverable. We propose that this Council writes to the First and Deputy First Ministers, the Northern Ireland Executive, and the UK Government to urgently establish a joint energy task force to address the following measures. The urgent rollout of the £17 million home heating oil support scheme, including capacity for increased funding as autumn approaches. Emergency legislation to provide an increased range of energy support mechanisms for households most in need. Extension of the UK rural fuel duty relief to rural parts of Northern Ireland. Fast-tracking the Warm Healthy Homes Fund. Exploring reduced public transport fares where appropriate. And target support for those workers who are particularly exposed to fuel costs. Chair, these are not radical proposals. They are practical steps that reflect the reality people are facing. I want to say this respectfully to members from Sinn Féin, and indeed all parties represented here. Those in the executive have the ability not just to call for action, but to help shape and deliver it. We would also urge the executive to do more than simply allocate blame and instead show real leadership. That should begin with direct engagement by meeting with the individuals, families and workers who are most affected by rising energy costs. There has been strong criticism in the South for lack of engagement. I think it's only fair that the same standard is applied here. That means the First Minister, the Deputy First Minister and relevant ministers taking the time to listen directly to those impacted. Through this task force, we can better understand burdens on strategic sectors by convening industry and agricultural energy cost forums. This is an opportunity for us as a Council to send a clear and united message, a message that is not limited to a single department, but recognises the need for a collective response. We all agree that people need help now. We all agree that existing funding should be used without delay. And we all agree that solutions should be practical and achievable. I ask that Councillor Cairns accept this amendment to strengthen this motion and send a clear message on behalf of the people we represent.
Thank you, Councillor Gilbreth. Can you send that amendment around to...
Best one star of Sandy, exactly. I don't know if I get one.
Okay. Yes. Professor Kearns. Order. You. Professor Kearns, are you willing to accept the amendment of Councillor Gilbreth?
No.
Okay, so we go to the vote. Is the amendment not accepted by Councillor Kearns? The amendment.
You support the amendment. You support the amendment.
Yeah, no.
Okay, can I order in the chamber? Mr. Howe, we need to deal with the amendment first before we bring you in on anything.
I know, but I just want to check, so this amendment will go on to the already amended motion, including Councillor Quinn's amendment?
Yes.
And will Councillor Quinn withdraw her motion for later on, or is that included? See how tired we get by this.
Well, they go on one issue at a time, Councillor Howe.
But I just want to check, this is in addition to the already amended motion.
As it sounds, it's
okay.
Councillor Kilbreth, I won't be accepting the amendment because it's letting the British government off the hook and allows them to shirk the responsibility of the people of the North.
Okay, so we'll go to the vote on the amendment. A recorded vote. Okay.
Oh.
So, going to the recorded vote. Yep. Going to the recorded vote.
Yeah.
Just to get clarity that the amendment is unacceptable because it lets the British government off the hook. The amendment actually states that it brings the British government to the table and demands that they spend extra money above the £35 per household. But if we want to say that the £17 million is adequate, of which the finance minister said isn't, and we don't want them to come and sit in front of us in a task force to extend the rural fuel duty, which is 5p for people living in rural areas, less. And like, we want more money from the British government. We want them at the table, and we want to put these things forward. So it's not shirking responsibility of them. It's actually holding them accountable. And I want that made clear. So if we're not taking the amendment, don't try and blame it on the British government getting off the hook. This is sticking them on a hook.
Councillor Burns, most of this is covered by the executive already.
Yeah. Councillor Brennan, are you in?
Let me in, yeah.
Yeah.
I understand parts on, and I fully agree with Councillor Quinn's amendment. I think it's an excellent addition. I fully agree with your motion. I think it's excellent. But I think we have to hold the British government's feet to the fire as much as possible. And what's not agreed and discussed within the Assembly is rural fuel duty. Additional funding for rural communities, additional funding for workers who are particularly exposed to fuel costs, reducing transport costs, that requires additional funding. So if we're going to go against the amendment, then be clear. Don't say it's letting the British government off the hook. This puts them clearly on a bigger hook, and all of us collectively together is putting them on a hook. This is not saying to the Northern Ireland Executive, you do this. This is saying you get the British government to the table and tell them this is what we want to do. We haven't rural fuel duty. I would love to tell people in South Armagh that another 5p is coming off because they live in a rural area, because UK rural fuel duty has now been extended to Northern Ireland. We can't do that unless they're in front of us. So we can vote against it, but just be clear on voting against it.
Okay, so we're going to...
Would it be beneficial if we send the full motion with all the amendments and everybody takes a minute to read it? You might want to suggest that. That's only a suggestion.
I'm going to suggest that we have 5 minutes, and we're capped at 5 minutes, or proposing a second for a 5 minute
He's
recess.
Propose
a second. Kill it, Councillor Fia. Okay. Yeah, 1 minute. Okay, everyone, can we have order in the chamber, please? Thank you. So, Councillor Kearns, are you willing to accept the motion?
No, I'm not.
The amendment, sorry.
No, I'm not. On the political decision to bring relief to the people in North struggling with fuel costs have to be made at Westminster, not Stormont. Liz O'Neill and Deputy First Minister Emma Littlepenny last week to wrote Keir Starmer urging him to bring forward a package of support measures for people in this region, and I think that covers that.
Okay, so we're going to recorded vote. Those for the amendment.
Councillor Andrews.
Four. You know what I like?
Councillor Fousey.
Abstain.
Councillor Brennan.
Against.
Oh, sorry. Councillor Byrne. Councillor Campbell.
Against.
Councillor Clark.
Against.
Councillor Devlin. Councillor Enright's absent. Councillor Fien.
Four.
Councillor Finn.
Four.
Councillor Galbraith.
Four.
Councillor Gibbons absent. Councillor Hanlon.
Yes.
Councillor Hannah.
Abstain.
Councillor Hart. Councillor Harding. Call them in. Councillor Harding. Councillor Hoyle.
Against.
Councillor High.
For.
Councillor Jackson.
Abstain.
Councillor Kearns. Councillor Orlicking.
For.
Councillor Cahill King.
Against.
Councillor Larkin.
Against.
Councillor Lawler.
Against.
Councillor Lee Searcher is absent. Councillor Lewis. Councillor McGuinness. Councillor Mathers. Councillor McAteer is absent. Councillor Declan Murphy. Councillor Kate Murphy. Councillor Selina Murphy. Councillor O'Hare. Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley. Councillor Rice. Councillor Rowan.
Against.
Councillor Taylor.
Abstain.
Councillor Tinley. Councillor Truesdale. Councillor Young. So I have 11 for, 20 against, and 6 abstentions.
And then the amendment fails.
Chair, can I ask that that's put in the chat again for media?
Yep. Councillor Taylor.
Thanks, Chair. I'm making the assumption, Chair, just the question's been asked, we never got a straight answer, but I'm assuming that the emergency motion will not be heard if based on the content of this motion as it stands. But the financial package that was offered, the $17 million that we're talking about in the initial motion, it was a small recognition of the crisis that we're facing, but it is a drop in the ocean compared to the vast fuel duty and VAT the government collects daily, and it's clear that much more must be done. A targeted scheme in partnership with the executive would be ideal for those hardest hit, but given the urgent need, a universal approach would be faster and more effective for working families. On the road down to this meeting this evening, on Evening Extra, it was reported that the Communities Minister is due to bring a paper to the executive this Thursday. Hopefully that will bring some welcome news on this issue. And it was a suggestion possibly about the executive providing some additional monies to the packets already provided by the UK government, but we'll see where we are on that. That's only reports at this stage. It's clear that families and businesses and farmers across Northern Ireland are being hammered by sky-high fuel costs, and it's time for a meaningful cut in fuel duty to bring real relief. We have constituents who are filling up their vans every other day just to get to work sites across the country, and they're really burning through money and at the pumps, hundreds of pounds in many instances, and that isn't sustainable. Higher transport costs will inevitably feed through to consumers in the form of increased prices for goods and services sooner rather than later. The hard truth is that a huge portion of what drivers pay for fuel is simply tax, fuel duty and plus VAT, and while global factors do play a role, the government has been taking more than its fair share for far too long. The only ones considered profiteering here are the Treasury and not the hard-working people who are trying to earn a living. We need the UK government to implement a plan for a substantial cut in fuel duty, and that's a position my party's been taking on this. We need this to be done immediately. Working families and businesses and farmers need our support. And people are being punished simply for going out to work and keeping our economy moving. And the freezing and reversion of duty increase is no longer enough, and the government needs to take some bold action now. And I will conclude by saying this, Chair. This issue affects everyone in our community, irrespective of what your political background may be. And I just want to express my disappointment that in seconding the motion this evening, actually, you know, Councillor Quinn really took away that aspect of cross-community support by making a political point about the constitutional position of Northern Ireland. There was no need for that. And actually, what you've probably done is cost support from the unionist side as respect to that there, because it's an issue that does affect everybody. And on issues like this, we should be speaking with one voice, and there's no need for those political, petty political points being made at a point when we are having everybody in our community affected by a serious issue like this. And it could deteriorate further, given where we are, even with events today in Iran. So it's just disappointing, Chair. We could have had a more united cross-community message on this, but that was taken away by some of the comments, the political comments about the constitutional position in Northern Ireland, which there was no need for.
Thank you. Okay, so are we in agreement? No? Okay. Ordered vote.
Councillor Andrews.
For.
Councillor Boisey.
Against.
Councillor Brennan.
For.
Councillor Byrne.
For.
Councillor Campbell.
For.
Councillor Clark.
For.
Councillor Devlin.
For.
Councillor Enright's absent. Councillor Fahan.
For.
Councillor Finn.
For.
Councillor Gilbray.
For.
Councillor Gibbons is absent. Councillor Hanlon.
For.
Councillor Hanna.
Against.
Councillor Hart. Councillor Hardy.
For.
Councillor Howell.
For.
Councillor Howey.
For.
Councillor Jackson.
Against.
Councillor Kearns. Councillor Orlicking.
For.
Councillor Cahill King.
For.
Councillor Larkin.
For.
Councillor Lawler.
For.
Councillor Lee Surgeon is absent. Councillor Lewis. Councillor McGuinness. Councillor Mathers. Councillor McAteer is absent. Councillor Declan Murphy. Councillor Kate Murphy. Councillor Selena Murphy. Councillor O'Hare. Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley. Councillor Rice. Councillor Rowan.
Or.
Councillor Taylor.
Yes.
Councillor Tinley. Councillor Truesdale. Councillor Young. I have 31 for and 6 against.
Okay, so the motion is passed. Councillor
Kearns, would you like to sum up? Just like to say thank you to everyone who supported the motion.
Okay, move on to item number 19. This is the motion that Leslie Menchie has proposed wildfowl and wildlife reserve at Campbell Lake. Standing order 16.1.6 is to be heard at committee. Councillor McGuinness, would you like to read your motion?
Thanks, Chair.
This council recognises the huge environmental, educational and recreational potential of the Camlagh Lake Wildfowl and Wetland Centre as promoted by Lisleigh Main Shed. Hence the Lisleigh Main Sheds group for their efforts so far, including the excellent Wildfowl and Wetlands Family Festival, acknowledges the council's commitment to embedding sustainability across all its operations and providing leadership for the wider community. Recognises that council support for the project is both welcome and necessary, and in keeping with its own sustainability goals. Commits to working with Lisleigh Main Sheds and their partners to deliver this project as a key environmental initiative with educational, recreational and tourist potential, and further commits to engaging with relevant funders, both internal and external, to see this project through to completion.
Councillor McGillis, can you inform me to second?
Councillor Declan Murphy, second.
Thank you, Councillor McGillis. Moving on to item number 20, notice of motion opposing aspirational climate targets. Councillor Jackson, would you like to speak to your motion and inform us as to who is seconding?
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm proposing that this council expresses deep concern that aspirational climate targets are impeding the delivery of high-quality public services and infrastructure that ratepayers deserve. It notes that the provisions of the Climate Change Act 2022 have been found by the courts to obstruct the progression of the A5 road upgrade, with far-reaching consequences for other major projects such as the A4 Enniskillen Southern Bypass. It is alarmed, furthermore, that the current legal requirement for minimum spend on active travel perversely acts as a barrier to vital investment in roads maintenance and repairs. Leaves Council should conduct a cost-benefit analysis of all climate-related policies and funding streams. Calls on the Minister for Agriculture, Environment and Rural Affairs to withdraw the current draft Climate Action Plan, which contains a range of proposals that are not quantified and would place additional burdens on farmers and households during a cost of living crisis, and further calls on the Minister to urgently bring proposals to the Executive to amend the net zero by 2050 emissions target in Northern Ireland. And this notice of motion will be seconded by Councillor Glenn Hanna.
I'm happy to second that, Chair.
Thank you very much, Councillor Hanna. Mr. Taylor.
Thanks, Chair. And thanks to Councillor Jackson for bringing forward the motion this evening. The latest report from the Audit Office has outlined deep concerns and the targets outlined in the Climate Change Bill do set a very high bar. Certainly my own party recognises that these targets were ambitious and are becoming increasingly unrealistic. Recent failures regarding energy targets, ongoing energy security concerns, failure to deliver roads, major roads infrastructure projects, and significant barriers that have been posed to agri-food security, all linked to climate change targets, mean that we must be realistic and pragmatic. And this build-up and failure to deliver has left us in a situation where a revision of these targets should be considered. Northern Ireland does have a role to play in meeting the United Kingdom's wider climate ambitions, but we cannot be in a position where we're breaking our people or our industries in pursuit of unachievable goals. And we can contribute meaningfully to the shared climate objectives, but we must look realistically at what is achievable at this point. Sure.
Thank you, Councillor Taylor. Councillor Hardy.
This motion and the intention behind it has nothing to do with the A5, the A4, farmers, ratepayers or the cost of living. It's merely the latest effort in a long-running DUP scaremongering campaign about essential and responsible climate action. It's also a frankly stunning illustration of the searing hypocrisy of the DUP when it comes to environmental issues. Now, they claim to want to protect farmers and farming. I'm from a farming family, going back I don't know how many generations, and hopefully going forward many more. Certainly every day when my dad goes out to tend to the farm, he has to take a slew of grandchildren with him who want to see cows and tractors and everything else. So I'm fully aware of the vital role of agriculture in Ireland, not just economically and as a primary producer, but in terms of culture, heritage and identity. And it's precisely because I want to protect farming here and ensure that it is sustainable for generations to come that I support climate action. when dealing with the facts around climate change, we can sometimes get lost in the scale and the scope of it. Huge numbers or warnings of environmental changes halfway around the world that are decades away can cause us to lose perspective. So I would draw our attention instead to the CCRA, the Climate Change Risk Assessment, whose latest reports not only do not deal with abstract numbers from the other side of the world, they deal with the direct effects of climate change here, specifically in the north. And their latest report warns, as a direct result of climate change, we are at increased risk of wildfires, flooding, drought, coastal erosion, saltification of water, saltification of soil, threats to natural carbon sinks, and increases in pests, pathogens, invasive species, and livestock diseases. That is what will destroy farming here, not environmental legislation. And I'm also stunned that the DUP had the gall to mention the A5 in their motion. They talk about the obstruction to the A5 being as a result of the Climate Change Act. It was not a result of the Climate Change Act. The ruling, the High Court ruling itself stated that because there was no operational carbon budget in place at the time, then the emissions of the development could not be measured against a quantified benchmark. Now, why was there no carbon budget at the time? I'll tell you why. Because less than 3 weeks after the Climate Change Act was passed, the DUP, having a strop over Brexit that they supported, brought down the Assembly, and so the various provisions of the Act, such as carbon budgets and climate action plans, couldn't be put into place. But perhaps their greatest hypocrisy is reserved for their full concern about the cost of living crisis. The cost of living crisis is being driven by global instability, endless forever wars, and our dependence on fossil fuels, not by climate action. Refusal to transition to renewable energy will only see us further shackled to an increasingly erratic fossil fuel market. And if you want evidence of the costs of that, you only need to head to your nearest petrol station. And who is at the helm of all this madness? Only the darling of the DUP, Donald Trump, who they were hobnobbing with not a month ago while he was invading Venezuela, facilitating the mass murder of children in Palestine and plotting his latest deranged assault on Iran. So you'll forgive me if I remain sceptical about the DUP's ongoing scaremongering around climate action. Achieving net zero and transitioning to renewable energy will not be easy, and it will have challenges, but it will also have enormous benefits. It will free us from the madness of the fossil fuel market. It will allow us to strive for self-sufficiency in energy. It will help reduce and stabilise costs. It will take power out of the hands of major multinationals who've sought to bleed families dry with shameless price gouging while they make record profits. And it will improve our air, improve our water, and improve our health. So if there are elements to the climate action plan that need to be improved or changed, that should be addressed. But scrapping it entirely or giving up on our net zero targets before we've even begun to try to achieve them would be an act of environmental vandalism and short-sighted cowardice. I oppose the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Hardy. Councillor King.
Thanks, Chair. The SDLP can't support this motion either. Climate targets are not the problem. Failure to deliver on them is. The real risk to our climate ambitions comes from the executive's collective inability to implement meaningful emission reductions. Major infrastructure projects are not being held back by climate legislation itself, including the Climate Change Act 2022, but by the failure of departments to properly demonstrate compliance and plan effectively within its framework. The evidence is clear. The long-term economic, environmental and societal benefits of achieving net zero far outweigh the costs. However, delivery must be underpinned by a just transition with a clear, credible pathway that supports workers, farmers and households. Political instability and periods of executive collapse, combined with poor strategic delivery, have done far more to undermine progress than the existence of climate targets. Whilst it is unsurprising that parties such as the DUP challenge climate targets, the lack of delivery and ambition from parties in government has also contributed to placing those targets at risk. This debate should not be about weakening targets, but about improving governance, accountability and delivery to ensure they are met in a fair and practical way. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor King. Councillor Truesdale.
Thank you, Chair. It is unhelpful for the DUP to bring such a politically charged motion relating to an active court case to this chamber. DERA has intervened to assist DFI in its appeal of the A5 decision to clarify the interpretation of the Climate Change Act. However, the original decision from Justice McLendon clearly stated that the Climate Change Action does not prevent a major infrastructure project which is a source of significant greenhouse gas emissions being devised, promoted, constructed and put into operation. Parroting the climate denial of Farage and Trump is not serious politics. It will ultimately see Northern Ireland left behind and deny us the benefits of climate action, which is jobs, growth, clean air, cheaper water, warmer homes, and now is the time to double our efforts, not lower our ambitions. The US-Israeli attacks in Iran have exposed households to rocketing bills and highlighted the weakness in our energy security. We need to get off the fossil fuel roller coaster and embrace clean, locally produced energy to lower bills and bring good green jobs. Climate action is a key element of solving the cost of living crisis. Every pound invested in decarbonisation yields benefits 2 to 4 times that value in return to society, and Northern Ireland is projected to make net savings by our fourth carbon budget. If all countries took the attitude of the DUP, no progress would ever be made. They should be showing leadership on climate action as part of the UK wider efforts. Just a note to active travel, it is not only climate action. It's a key healthcare intervention and will improve health and well-being. It is not acting as a barrier to investment. What's acting as a barrier is years of underinvestment leading to massive maintenance backlogs, a lack of action on the Barden report, and 4 collapses totaling 10 out of 26 years. That is the biggest barrier to investment. Now, I think Councillor Taylor mentioned the utility regulator, and I've heard that quite a lot, especially for one of the DUP MLAs, unlikely to meet targets. But the next word never comes, which is because. Unlikely to meet targets because the utility regulator lacks modern statutory powers, operating on legislation from 2003. Unlikely to meet targets because there are significant delays in grid infrastructure development and slow, uncompetitive planning processes, which are hindering wind farm and solar. Our sector faces challenges in attracting investment, with reports highlighting Northern Ireland as unattractive to investors due to the identified bottlenecks. So it's very important to take that sentence forward with the because. So those are the reasons why. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Truesdale. Councillor Reilly.
Yes, Chairman. Chairman, I'm really concerned about Councillor Hardy's contribution, because basic science tells you that if a carbon molecule is released in China, that affects here exactly the same way as it affects China. It builds up in the atmosphere. But carbon is the basic building block of life, and all that we've seen, all the scientific evidence that we've seen, is a greening of the earth because of increased carbon levels that are historically low in terms compared to past millennia. But over the weekend, France, Germany are reactivating power stations, coal-fired power stations. China's building 5 coal power stations a week to meet their energy demands. And Councillor Hardy thinks that by penalising ordinary people in Northern Ireland by punitive carbon taxes and ridiculous ridiculous demands on reaching the demands as demanded in the Act, it's just absolute, I don't want to say stupidity, but it's delusional that what Councillor Hardy's talking about will make any difference to the world, the atmosphere in the world. It's just totally beyond me how you can inflict so much damage and pain on our economy and on our ordinary working class people. The biggest transfer of wealth from the ordinary working class people to these elites who are involved in this green energy. It's just sickening. whenever I see what's going on. And we need to catch ourselves on and abandon a lot of this policy and get back to what's good for ordinary people and not for some idiot sitting in Brussels or London dictating carbon policies that is only that only benefits the rich. Thank you, Chairman. Sorry, I can hardly talk to the troops that slow.
Councillor Hardy.
Yes, sir, just a couple of points there. I mean, Councillor Riley seems a touch confused. We don't legislate for China, so you know, nothing we can do about that. I'd also add that when it comes to the scientific evidence around climate change, I'll take the word of the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change and the many hundreds of top scientists around the world who make
this report,
rather than Councillor Riley, who's struggling to pronounce the word molecule.
Councillor Hardy afforded you the opportunity to speak. You will afford him the same opportunity. Thank you very much. Right, we have dissent in the chamber. So, can we go for a vote? Okay. So, are we... We're voting a show of hands? Record a vote. Okay. Apologies, Sarah.
Councillor Andrews.
Against.
Councillor Bowsey.
For.
Councillor Brennan.
Against.
Councillor Byrne. Yes. Councillor Campbell.
Against.
Councillor Clark.
Against.
Councillor Devlin. Against. Councillor Enright's absent. Councillor Fain. Councillor Finn.
Against.
Councillor Gilbreth.
Against.
Councillor Gibbons absent. Councillor Hanlon.
Against.
Councillor Hanna.
For.
Councillor Hart. Councillor Hardy. Councillor Hoyle.
Against.
Councillor Howie.
Against.
Councillor Jackson.
For.
Councillor Kearns. Councillor Orlicking. Councillor Cahulking.
Yes.
Councillor Larkin.
Against.
Councillor Lawler.
Against.
Councillor Lee Surgeoner is absent. Councillor Lewis. Councillor McGuinness. Councillor Mathers. Councillor McAteer is absent. Councillor Declan Murphy. Councillor Kate Murphy. Councillor Selena Murphy. Councillor O'Hare. Councillor Quinn. Councillor Riley. Councillor Rice. Councillor Rowan.
Yes.
Councillor Taylor.
For.
Councillor Tinnelly. Councillor Truesdale. Councillor Young. That's 6-4 and 31 against.
So the motion fails. Councillor Jackson.
Yep, thanks, Chair. I will just start off, Chair, by saying in the recent court ruling on the A5 road project, Mr. Justice McAlinton concluded that if the road is to be built, emission targets met and carbon budgets not to be exceeded, other infrastructure projects may have to go by the wayside and other sectors may have to be squeezed. So current climate change targets should not be allowed to block investment in infrastructure projects in this way. Chair, there's no question that more sustainable policies in areas like energy, housing and transport can bring benefits for the standard of living enjoyed by people in Northern Ireland and help isolation and isolation. However, many of our citizens now perceive climate action to mean higher taxes, increased costs for basic goods and services and a residual threat to jobs and livelihoods, particularly in farming families. We believe that there's an urgent need to inject a sense of realism into Northern Ireland's climate ambitions. That ambition should be realistic, deliverable, and which do not unduly constrain investment in vital frontline services, including throughout our district council area. This notice of motion is being proposed, was proposed tonight on behalf of the people in our communities who are under pressure with the lack of basic services, and that includes health, education and roads. They are experiencing a cost of living crisis and they're crying out for some common sense policies and legislation to prioritise what actually matters in their day-to-day life. You know, try telling one of our local nurses who was on her way to work a night shift in the hospital when she drove over two massive potholes, busted two wheels, alloys and tyres and all, left with a repair bill, night shift off work. Try telling her that there's no money to fix the roads, but there's money being spent on active travel. try telling the hard-working man who's leaving the house in the morning at 6:30 a.m. to get the building site in a van. No.
Call the police. Throw them out.
Can I continue? Yeah.
Make it brief.
Oh, well. Tell those motorists who face a repair bill, days off work, and massive consequences of our roads being in the state that they're in, tell them that it's okay. We're on target for a net zero by 2050. The thing is outrageous, and that sort of target is ridiculous and unachievable, and people have simply had enough. It is time to prioritise what matters. We want roads that we can use every day and a fit state to drive on, not money spent on projects that aren't a priority. So it's time for the dear Minister to step up and make legislative changes, and it's time to finally apply some common sense. Thank you, Chair.
Moving on then, 21, notice of motion, Tollymoor Mount Centre. Here's for Councillor Lawler. Councillor Lawler, will you speak to your motion and inform us as to your second on it?
Thanks, Chair. This Council notes the ongoing review and current status of Tollymoor National Outdoor Centre in Brianceford and recognises the significant concern within the local community and the wider outdoor recreation sector regarding its future. This Council recognises that Tollymoor National Outdoor Centre is a world-class facility in the heart of the Mourns, providing an essential public service in safety training and the development of mountain leadership. This service must be protected in the context of increasing visitor numbers to the Mourns, ensuring the safety of those using our natural environment. This Council resolves to write to the Chief Executive of Sport NI to reiterate its support for the reopening of Tollymoor National Outdoor Centre at the earliest possible opportunity, alongside the development of a long-term financially sustainable operating model which protects core education and training services while improving access for the local community. This Council will also request that findings of the ongoing review and the proposed operating models are shared with the Council to ensure alignment with local development and tourism strategies. Thanks. I'll keep this brief. It is regrettable that the centre has remained closed for such a long period, particularly at a time when we're seeing significant increases in visitor numbers to the Mourne Mountains. The role the centre plays in safety training and the development of mountain leadership is more important than ever, and it should not be assessed solely on profit margins. At the same time, the centre should not exist in isolation. It has the potential to serve as a hub that supports the local community, the outdoor recreation centre and the wider regional economy. And this will be seconded by Councillor Clark.
Clark, do you like to speak to the motion?
They turn the lights on. Thanks. Thanks, Chair. I'd like to thank Councillor Lawler for bringing the motion before the Chamber. Tollymoor Outdoor Centre is not simply another public facility. It is a strategically important regional asset located in the heart of the Mourns, and recognised across the island of Ireland as a centre of excellence for outdoor education, mountain leadership and safety training. It has played a vital role in developing outdoor instructors, teachers, youth leaders and mountain professionals. It has helped equip people with the skills, judgment and confidence required to safely enjoy and manage our natural environment. We are all aware of the significant increase in the visitor numbers to the Mourns and surrounding areas in recent years, as our district continues to grow as a tourism and recreation destination. The demand for outdoor leadership, safety awareness and responsible access continues to increase. With more walkers, climbers, cyclists and visitors using our mountains and trails, there's a clear need for professional training, leadership development and public safety education. It is essential that a financially sustainable operating model that protects the centres essential education and training services, while also improving access for the local community, including local sports groups, community groups and families. Improving accommodation access in the centre, where users of the Mourns can book an overnight stay and a place where they can get a meal after a day in the mountains. Sinn Féin want to see the Tollymoor Outdoor Centre reopen at the earliest possible opportunity, but we also want a future model that is sustainable. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Councillor Clark. Councillor Devlin,
Thank you, Chair, and I promise I haven't got a half an hour speech you'll be glad to hear. Thanks to Councillor Lawler for tabling this motion this evening, for this topic to be your first motion of this council as well. Now, that's very much appreciated. The content of the motion has been the SDLP's position to date, so we're more than happy to re-emphasise our support this evening. As we know, the Tullymore Centre is a vital asset, not only for our district, but countrywide, and for everyone who depends on that high-quality outdoor safety training. We all deserve that clarity has been referenced there, and commitment about the centre's future. I know that Colin McGrath and myself met with the consultants a few weeks back and made our position very clear. Sports NI must move beyond delay and ensure the centre is reopened as soon as possible, providing that long-term sustainable model that protects its core training role and strengthens community access. Chair, thank you, and thanks to Niall again.
Thank you, Councillor Devlin. Councillor Hannah.
Thanks, Chair. Our position in the DUP is Tullymore is a unique and strategically important facility at supporting outdoor education, safety training and tourism. We understand the strength of local concern about its current closure and future direction. We support the reopening of the centre at the earliest possible opportunity. At the same time, it is important that any future model is financially sustainable and does not hemorrhage money, as maybe in previous times. Protects core training and safety functions and enhances access for local communities and users. We welcome the ongoing review and forthcoming public consultation and stress that stakeholders' engagement must be meaningful. Ultimately, outcomes should align with wider tourism and development objectives and meet the expectations of the local community. The one thing I'd like to add to it, and it isn't in my notes, the more I've thought about it, sir, I have, is this council needs to take a bit more proactive inclusivity of this here. It's been less it has to Sports NI, and I would actually ask the, I don't know if it's Andy, he's looking the wrong way, say, is perhaps our council should, I'm sure they will be involved in the consultation anyway, they'll put their piece in there, but the council does need to play a part in this here. This Mountain Centre, Tullymore Mountain Centre, is one of, I think it's possibly the only one in Ireland that is. It's extremely important, so it is, and it sets a tone there that you see the facility sitting up there empty. It's actually so disappointing when you can pass it. It's just unbelievable. But hopefully in the future and in the near future, something will be put in place and our council will play a proactive part in it on the, and throw a bit of money at it. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Glenn. Councillor Truesdale.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Councillor Lawler, for bringing this motion. And it's good to see the words in it, long-term financially sustainable operating model and findings of an ongoing review. That's critical to get. Many have already lost their jobs and the doors are firmly closed. My own children benefited from canoe capsize safety skills, overnight stays and rock climbing courses, and their ability to transfer those skills right to their own doorstep to the sea and the mountains was hugely beneficial. We've already lost the rock pool, where hundreds of children carried out their life-saving qualifications, which were matched with the type of water safety courses in Tullymore. So how many more activities promoting a healthy mental and physical lifestyle can be stripped from this area? Tullymore must have full community access, expand their customer base, and be of a benefit to the local economy at the same time, providing high-quality training and qualifications. So I absolutely support this motion. Thank you, Chair.
Councillor Truesdale, Councillor Taylor.
Yeah, Chair, I'll make my remarks brief. Just want to thank Councillor Lawler in the first instance for bringing forward the motion this evening. The centre itself is certainly a wonderful resource to have within the Mourns, and it has played an important role in the local community in terms of training instructors and providing activities for local groups, including schools in the area. So there are many different aspects of benefit that it has provided, including enhancing our tourism potential as an area. And I think, you know, from the motion tonight, it is very clear that we outline our strong support for the centre and that we do implore upon the Chief Executive of Sport NI for certainty to be provided urgently on a sustainable operating model for the facility going forward, and one that we want to see obviously that protects what has been offered previously. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Councillor Taylor. So we're all in agreement? Yes. Councillor Lawler, would you like to sum up?
Well, thanks everyone, and it's good to get a bit of harmony after a long evening, so... I just want to say this is a facility with real potential, and I believe it can play a much greater role in the life of the Mourns and the local community going forward. Thanks.
Okay, Councillor Lawler. We have item number 22, which is deferred. Item number 23, notice of motion on authorised use of off-road vehicles in council owned land. And in accordance with standard 16.1.6, it will be heard at committee. Mr. Mathers, would you like to read your motion and inform us as to who is second?
Thanks, Chair. Councillor Kate Murphy will be seconding. So, that this council notes the ongoing and widespread community concern regarding the dangerous and unauthorised use of scramblers, quad bikes and other off-road vehicles on council owned land, open spaces, parks and public pathways, that our parks and public spaces are vital resources for the people of Newry Morning Down and should be protected, enhanced and kept safe for people. The increased risk these vehicles pose to members of the public, including children, older people, dog walkers and other users of shared public spaces, the sometimes considerable damage caused to green spaces and sports pitches by repeated off-road vehicle activity, and the negative effect this has on biodiversity and our local environment. That existing legislation which restricts the use of mechanically propelled vehicles on land without the landowner's permission. This council will proactively engage with police and the community to enforce this policy, audit all parks that are currently being used for these vehicles to ensure that entrance and exit points are properly secured and access to these sites are safe and pedestrian friendly. Calls on the council to develop and enforce an implementation plan in collaboration with the PSNI and local stakeholders, including regular joint operations on patrols and hotspot areas, clear reporting pathways for the public, and use of signage and all other appropriate deterrent measures.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Councillor Mathers. We have an emergency notice of motion from Councillor Quinn. Councillor Quinn, would you like to proceed with the emergency?
I'm content to make the motion that me and Jeremy put together that can be withdrawn.
Okay. Mr. Reddick?
Yeah, absolutely agree with Councillor Mother's notice of motion.
Thankfully, everybody enjoy your safe drive home.